guys, I'm Bob the Drop. Welcome to my podcast. Do you like water? If you do, you're going to love me. I'm pure and simple. I'm talking refreshing. Yeah. Spent 500 years in a glacier. Boy, was that cold. I never was and never will be tap water. Nope. Bottled at the source, the base of Mount Shasta. Yep, pure and simple. Naturally the best. You can try me by calling 1-800-922-6227. Mount Shasta Spring Water.
Come on in the Black Bear Diner, where the portions are bear-sized and the service makes you feel at home. With breakfast served all day, anytime's right to dig into our one-of-a-kind sweet cream pancakes, Bear Benedicts, or generous sides of thick-cut bacon and tantalizing sausage patties, house-made from our signature recipe. Whenever you do breakfast, do it at Black Bear Diner, because around here, every plate comes with heaping helpings of happiness.
Black Bear feels like home.
Welcome to the Ben Shapiro Show. This hour, we'll be sharing a broadcast from earlier this year. Take a listen.
We're going to go through the history of George Washington, because here's the thing. Everybody thinks that George Washington is the fussy-looking old guy on the dollar bill. He's got the wooden teeth, old-fashioned. Here's what you need to know about George Washington. George Washington was a badass. He was a badass. We don't tend to think of him that way, obviously, because he's in paintings and we don't have video of him in the middle of a war or something. But that's what he was. Everybody in the colonial United States knew that George Washington was a badass. He was a celebrity. He was a dramatic figure of intrigue his entire life. Women wanted to be with him, and men wanted to be him. I mean, he was a stud, George Washington. So let's start from the very beginning. George Washington was born on February 22nd, 1732, to Augustine Washington and his second wife, Mary Ball. He had two older half-brothers. He was the oldest of six children from Mary Ball. So while his dad, Augustine, was a well-propertied planter, George didn't actually have it super easy in a lot of ways when he was growing up. His father died when he was 11, and his mom was apparently a deeply overprotective human being, which makes sense since her dad died when she was 3 and her mom died when she was 12. So she was constantly riding George about being close to home. When Augustine died, George went to live with his older brother, Lawrence. Now, Lawrence was the hero of young George Washington's life. He was the guy who George wanted to pattern himself after. Lawrence was a British soldier, and a pretty awesome one at that. He was 14 years older than George, and Lawrence had joined up with the Virginia Foot Regiment. He was commissioned as a senior captain. He actually served in naval expeditions against New Granada, Cuba, and Panama, as well as in Jamaica. So he traveled around with the British Navy. While he was serving, he contracted tuberculosis. That would eventually kill him. And when Lawrence came back to America, he married Anne Fairfax, and he took up residence in Mount Vernon. So originally, Mount Vernon was actually George's brother's place. And that's where George went to live after his dad died. He also became adjutant general for the militia of Northern Virginia and got himself elected to the House of Burgesses. Lawrence was actually going to be the famous Washington, sort of like Joseph Kennedy Jr. was supposed to be the famous Kennedy. Lawrence was going to be the famous Washington. He already had rank in the British Army. He was adjutant general for the militia of Northern Virginia. He was already sitting in the House of Burgesses. George didn't have any money, and he didn't have any real connections, but Lawrence connected him to his wife's family, the Fairfax family. So when Mary Ball, George's mom, refused to allow him to join up with the British Navy, George instead began working for the Fairfax family as a surveyor. He learned mathematics, and he became expert regarding the physical geography of the country, which, of course, would come in supremely handy when he was commander-in-chief of America's armed forces. Meanwhile, he studied and he read. Unlike Lawrence, who actually went all the way to Britain for his education, George stayed back in Virginia, and he taught himself not just about history and religion, but about civility and behavior. He famously copied out 110 maxims from the Rules of Civility and Decent Behavior in Company and Conversation. This is a book that's completely fallen out of favor, but George knew that he actually had to train himself to be sort of a self-help specialist. In fact, a lot of the founders were. Benjamin Franklin was much the same way. He created rules for life. George Washington literally copied out these maxims from the Rules of Civility and Decent Behavior in Company and Conversation. These were rules like, all actions done in company must show respect for those who are present, and let your countenance be pleasant, but in serious matters somewhat grave. So stuff that you sort of take for granted, but people don't train their behavior these days. We sort of assume that naturalistic behavior is the best. George didn't think that.
More on that in a second.
But first, your life is about to get better. You can now listen to all 3 hours of The Ben Shapiro Show on demand. How? Well, head on over to DailyWire.com and become an insider. A Daily Wire Insider membership includes not only all 3 hours of this magnificent program, but you can ask me questions through the mailbag. You can listen to live and recorded episodes of The Andrew Klavan Show, The Michael Knowles Show, The Matt Walsh Show, and more. Plus, as an all-access member, you can also take part in our awesome Ask Me Anything-style discussion feature where you can log in, you can talk to me, our other hosts, our writers, even special guests during live online chats. Since it's the holiday season, from now until January 1st, all Insider Plus gift memberships will be 25% off. If you join Insider Plus or the all-access tier, you get the exclusive Leftist Tears Tumblr. Also, be sure to check out our Daily Wire store over at Amazon. You can get the Daily Wire hoodies, T-shirts, sweaters, and more. The merch makes great holiday gifts. It's the only way to get all 3 hours of The Ben Shapiro Show on demand and get it 25% off. Go to dailywire.com/gift to get 25% off. Again, dailywire.com/gift and get 25% off.
Meanwhile, George learned hunting and dancing and fencing from Lawrence. He's a big dude. He was about 6'3", which for the time was enormous, because the average height in the United States at this time was 5'6", 5'7". People think that John Adams was short for the time. John Adams was actually average height. So George Washington, if you were to put him in today's context, he'd probably be 6'5", 6'6". Because he was 6'3", that's what led to all of the legends about him throwing a silver dollar across the Potomac River. In reality, he probably threw a rock across the Rappahannock, which is not as much of a feat. That's like 150, 200 feet. Then, in 1752, Lawrence died. So George leased Mount Vernon from Lawrence's widow, and most importantly for the story of him becoming a badass, he inherited Lawrence's position as adjutant for the militia. So he was 20 years old, and he was adjutant general for the entire militia in Virginia, which is a pretty high-up position for a 20-year-old guy. And this is where the legend of George Washington really begins. So by the time Washington took over as adjutant general, the British government was in the midst of a conflict with the French over the fate of America east of the Mississippi, outside British possession, so between the Appalachians and the Mississippi River. Things came to a head in the Ohio Valley. The French military had taken control of the area, and that prompted Virginia's governor, a guy named Robert Dinwiddie, to demand that the French withdraw. He decided to appoint Major George Washington, then 21 years old, to go parley with the French. Note, people today are on their parents' health insurance until they are 26 years old. 21 years old, now, we still expect you to be in the midst of your stupidity. You're in college campuses, drinking and getting high and making a waste of your life. We don't expect you to get married until you're 30. At 21, Major George Washington was sent to parley with the French. He and his small party met up with several Native American tribes on the way to meet the French, who promptly rejected the British claims. On the way back, Washington braved the freezing cold, as well as a pretty dramatic fall into the Allegheny River. He's actually nearly drowned, but suffered no ill effects. One of the fascinating things about Washington is the guy basically nearly died every 5 minutes. Every 5 minutes, somebody was trying to shoot him, or he was falling into a river, or he was within danger of death. And yet he lived an incredibly healthy life up to the point of his death in his early 60s. And the mission, like a lot of Washington's missions in the future, was a giant failure. And Washington's story is really fascinating because it wasn't the story of a guy who kept succeeding and then succeeding and then succeeding. It was basically him succeeding and then surviving, and then failing and then surviving, and then failing and then surviving, and then every so often he'd win a success. That was pretty much it. But the headlines were great from this mission because Washington did the smart thing and he kept a journal. That journal was used by the governor of Virginia, Dinwiddie, to push the British government into further commitment in the French and Indian War. Most importantly, the journal made Washington famous. Here's an excerpt. He said, "The cold was so extremely severe that Mr. Gist had all of his fingers and some of his toes froze, and the water was shut up so hard that we found no difficulty in getting off the island on the ice in the morning." At the time, this was some pretty hair-raising stuff. So he was basically writing adventure stories while he was a major in the militia in Virginia. And that was just the beginning of Washington's rise to fame. With the British public aroused to war with the French, Dinwiddie sent Washington, now colonel, to fight the French. He had 150 troops under his command. He had no actual military experience. His first conflict with the French went pretty well. He authorized a raid that ended with 10 dead Frenchmen. Expecting a counterattack, Washington then made a really bad military decision. Again, he made a lot of very bad military decisions during his career. He had his men hunker down in a makeshift fort that he called Fort Necessity. In a weird mistake for a surveyor, he actually built the fort at the bottom of a valley. So that meant that when there was heavy rain, his forces were constantly soaked. All of the water was pouring into the fort. He also built it too close to the woods, which meant that the enemy could just stand behind the trees and fire at his forces. Washington ended up surrendering. But good news for Washington, he wasn't blamed. Again, he was failing upward. Instead, Dinwiddie blamed the other colonies for failing to come to Washington's aid. The British essentially authorized the French and Indian War on the back
of the expedition. So another failed mission and another win for George Washington. I mean, this guy was kissed by fate. At this point, Washington was already chafing at British high-handedness. So he was not fond of the way that the British treated the Americans. In May 1754, he wrote to Governor Dinwiddie complaining that Virginians were being treated differently than people with royal commissions, stating, "I really do not see what the lives of His Majesty's subjects in Virginia should be of less value than those in other parts of His American dominions, especially when it is well known that we must undergo double their hardships." So already you're starting to see sort of the beginnings of Washington as American patriot. That starts with him feeling like he was treated as a second-class citizen inside the British military. In just a second, we'll continue telling the story of George Washington.
But first, you need the perfect gift for this holiday season. What is it? More of me. More of us here over at the Daily Wire. We're talking about a Daily Wire membership, 25% off from now until January 1st. All Insider Plus gift memberships are 25% off. That means your loved one will get all the fantastic perks, plus the majestic Leftist Ears Tumblr, and you will get the savings. As a member, you can listen to all 3 hours of this radio show on demand when you become a Daily Wire Insider. Plus, as an all-access member, you can take part in our awesome Ask Me Anything-style discussion feature, where you can log in and talk to me, our other hosts, our writers, even special guests during live online chats. Also, be sure to check out the Daily Wire store. You can stock up on official Daily Wire hoodies, t-shirts, sweaters, and more. It's a perfect place for your holiday shopping needs. You ever wonder what the man behind this deep, mellifluous voice looks like? You want to listen to the show at your desk while you pretend to do work? This is the only way to get all 3 hours of The Ben Shapiro Show on demand. No other way. So head on over to DailyWire.com, become an insider, join tens of thousands of fans in supporting the largest conservative podcast in America. Again, that is 25% off all of those Insider Plus gift memberships this holiday season. Give them a gift they will thank you for all year long. Go to DailyWire.com/gift to get 25% off. Again, DailyWire.com/gift.
Alrighty, so back to the story of George Washington. So George Washington was already ticked at the British. He felt like Americans were being treated as sort of secondary citizens. Meanwhile, the legend of Washington grew. So he resigns his commission, but then he joins up in 1755 as a volunteer aide to General Edward Braddock, the man in charge of driving the French out of the Ohio Valley. Washington advised Braddock about using the natural cover of the land rather than acting in formation, but Braddock ignored him because the British were constantly talking about fighting in open fields and ranks. Washington complained to Dinwiddie again. He said, "In short, the dastardly behavior of the regular troops exposed all those who were inclined to do their duty to almost certain death." In other words, why are we marching in formation when we have these trees right here we could be hiding behind? On July 9th, 1755, Braddock's men began to build a road that would allow more British soldiers to traverse the terrain. That's when the French and their Native American allies attacked. The Battle of the Wilderness, as it was called, would end with the complete destruction of Braddock's forces, including the severe wounding of Braddock. Washington found himself in charge of the retreat. And here is where Washington demonstrated full scale. I mean, you talk about a brave dude. Washington had no fear. I'm going to explain what happened at the Battle of the Wilderness in 1 second. First,
I need to take a moment to remind you, you can get a great deal on a subscription over at Daily Wire right now, like this minute. You head on over to dailywire.com, and you can get a subscription right now for 25% off from now until January 1st. That means your loved one will get all the fantastic perks, plus the majestic Leftist Tears Tumblr makes a great Christmas or Hanukkah gift, year-end gift for yourself. You can listen to all 3 hours of this radio show on demand when you become a Daily Wire insider. Not only do you get my show, you'll also be able to hear from prominent conservatives like Andrew Klavan and Matt Walsh. You even get the execrable Michael Knowles. Listen to live and recorded episodes of the Michael Knowles Show, the Matt Walsh Show, the Andrew Klavan Show, and other Daily Wire productions like Daily Wire Backstage. And you get to talk with us. You can ask all of us questions through the mailbag. We answer them on our shows. Plus, as an all-access member, you can take part in our awesome Ask Me Anything-style discussion feature. You can log in. You can talk directly to me or our other hosts or our writers, even special guests, during live online chat. That is dailywire.com/gift and get 25% off, a fantastic deal for all of the Shapiro lovers in your life. dailywire.com/gift. Go check it out right now. Do not wait. Alrighty, coming up,
we'll continue the story of George Washington. At this point, it's 1755. George Washington is 23 years old, and he is about to make his national debut as a supremely famous soldier because of the act of bravery that I'm about to discuss. George Washington, badass. The story continues. This is The Ben Shapiro Show.
If you can't seem to stay ahead of your bills, then this message is for you. How would you like to have a large portion of your credit card debt, medical bills, and department store debt forgiven? National Credit Card Relief would like to give you free information on a proven debt forgiveness program. This program has been used by thousands to legally forgive millions in unsecured debt. It's not bankruptcy. It's not consolidation. This special program actually wipes clean the portion of your debt that is forgiven from what you owe your creditors. Call for free information and get all your questions answered in the first free call. The more you owe, the more you can save. If you have at least $10,000 or more in credit card bills, this debt forgiveness program can be very effective. Call for free information and find out more now. 800-291-6670. There is no cost or obligation for the information. Don't wait. Call 800-291-6670. That's 800-291-6670. Get your debt problem solved. Call 800-291-6670 today. Not available in North Dakota.
If you have hard water, the lime scale not only leaves white spots, it clogs pipes and breaks down appliances, costing you hundreds of dollars in energy and wear. Eliminate lime scale and other water issues like brown staining, bad odors, and lead with HydroCare water products available from Wave Home Solutions. Wave's affordable systems don't use salts or chemicals. You'll love the way your water tastes, smells, and looks. Satisfaction guaranteed. For more information, go to WaveBestWater.com. That's WaveBestWater.com.
Hey, would you like to have more success in life? My gut response to that was, yes, I'm definitely it. Be sure to listen to my podcast, Wealth, Power, and Influence with Jason Stapleton.
I'm an entrepreneur, a business coach, and an investor.
I'd like to share with you my take on life, culture, and success. Some of the people that you thought would just be warriors through and through end up crumbling. Listen and subscribe to Wealth, Power, and Influence for free anywhere you get your podcast.
From the Westwood One Podcast Network,
where the conversation starts.
Are you looking for senior care for your mom or dad but don't know where to start? Hi, I'm Joan London with The Place for Mom. Nobody knows your parent or loved one better than you, and nobody knows senior living better than the experts at A Place for Mom. They've helped thousands of families find the right place for their mom or dad.
I was so glad that I called A Place for Mom. My advisor really listened and was truly my partner in finding senior care for my dad. She went out of her way to get to know him as a person and was always there whenever I had a question.
The senior living advisors at A Place for Mom partner with thousands of families every month, listening and offering local knowledge and advice to help find the best senior living communities across the country. And it's a free service. Here's the number.
Call A Place for Mom at 1-800-469-0286.
There's a place for answers, A Place for Mom. Call today.
Call A Place for Mom at 1-800-469-0286. That's 1-800-469-0286.
Welcome back to The Ben Shapiro Show.
We are going through the history of George Washington, for folks who don't know, so this entire hour is dedicated to the story of George Washington. We are talking about George Washington's first proof of complete badassery. This is 1755, and George Washington, who is now a colonel, is in charge of the retreat during the Battle of the Wilderness, a battle between the British forces and the French and Native Americans in the French and Indian War. So here's what happens. Braddock is wounded. Washington had urged Braddock to have his soldiers stationed in the trees. Instead, Braddock said, no, we're going to walk right here in formation. That went very poorly. So Washington gathered some 200 men and led a counterattack. The counterattack was unsuccessful, but Washington's personal bravery was unbelievable. Every single officer on horseback in this battle was shot, except for George Washington. Braddock would die, but he would give Washington his battle uniform sash before expiring. Here's what Washington wrote his younger brother. He said, as I have heard, since my arrival at this place, a circumstantial account of my death and dying speech, I take this early opportunity of contradicting the first and of assuring you that I have not as yet composed the latter. But by the all-powerful dispensations of Providence, I have been protected beyond all human probability or expectation, for I had 4 bullets through my coat and 2 horses shot under me, yet escaped unhurt, although death was leveling my companions on every side of me. So 4 bullets through his coat, 2 horses die under him. He's fine. One captive of Indian Chief Red Hawk would later describe how he had stated that he had shot at Washington some 11 times without hitting him. Later, Washington would travel with a friend through the area. The story, according to Washington's grandson, goes that the two encountered an old Native American chief who explained, quote, "It was on this day, when the white man's blood mixed with the streams of our forests, that I first beheld this chief. I called to my young men and said, 'Mark yon tall and daring warrior. He is not of the Redcoat tribe. He hath an Indian's wisdom, and his warriors fight as we do, himself alone exposed. Quick, let your aim be certain, and he dies. Our rifles were leveled, rifles which, but for you, knew not how to miss. 'Twas all in vain, a power mightier far than we shielded you. Seeing you were under the special guardianship of the Great Spirit, we immediately ceased to fire at you. The Great Spirit protects that man and guides his destinies. He will become the chief of nations, and a people yet unborn will hail him as the founder of a mighty empire. I am come to pay homage to the man who is the particular favorite of heaven and who can never die in battle. That's a pretty awesome legend to have written about you, right? In the end, Washington ends up being given commands of Virginia's entire military. After the French and Indian War, he resigns his commission again. Why? Well, because, again, he was fed up with the British treating the Americans badly. After the war, Washington marries the hot young thing, Martha Custis. So you tend to think of Martha Custis kind of dowdy and all. She wasn't. She was the hot young widow at the time. She was hugely wealthy, the result of an inheritance from her first husband. Ironically, they were actually married at a plantation called the White House Plantation. Martha would prove to be a loyal and devoted wife and a revolutionary in her own right. For the next decade, Washington would tend to Mount Vernon. He would expand its structures. He would experiment with agriculture. And then he would serve in the Virginia House of Burgesses. Well, as things begin to heat up with Great Britain, Washington begins to take a more active role in the Virginia House. So Great Britain passes something called the Townsend Act, which forced the colonists to pay an indirect glass tax on glass, lead, paints, paper, and tea, all of which were supposed to be imported from the mother country. Tariffs, guys. Bad policy. Washington calls for a boycott on British goods throughout Virginia. The Townsend Act, you'll remember from middle school, led to the Boston Tea Party, which was designed to remind the British that they actually did not have the authority to tax the colonies without representation. George Washington writes to George Mason, a seminal founding figure, in April 1769, at a time when our lordly masters in Great Britain will be satisfied with nothing less than the deprivation of American freedom, it seems highly necessary that something should be done to avert the stroke and maintain the liberty which we have derived from our ancestors. Then Britain passes something called the Intolerable Act. They close down Boston Harbor, they take direct control of Massachusetts, and they allow the crown to force private buildings to house British soldiers. This is the quartering of British soldiers that the American Constitution's Third Amendment was designed to prevent. Washington calls this an invasion of our rights and privileges, and in 1774, he is sent by the state of Virginia to the First Continental Congress. Now, no one knows anything about the First Continental Congress because it really didn't do anything except for calling for the Second Continental Congress, and that's the thing where that's the Congress where everything happens. Also, as soon as the First Continental Congress is over, Washington goes shopping for muskets and uniforms. He's gearing up already. When the Second Continental Congress begins, Washington shows up. He is wearing a military uniform he had designed himself back at Mount Vernon. He did this because he wanted to be the leader of America's armed forces. He had already committed himself to his path. He wrote to George William Fairfax, his brother-in-law, on May 31st, 1775, "Unhappy it is, though, to reflect that a brother's sword has been sheathed in a brother's breast, and that the once happy and peaceful plains of America are either to be drenched with blood or inhabited by slaves. Sad alternative, but can a virtuous man hesitate in his choice?" So Washington is already an early revolutionary, 1774, 1775. He was ready, and everybody knew he was ready. Not only was he from Virginia, which was really important because when the Congress was selecting a military chief, they have to pick somebody not from Massachusetts. Right now, every battle has happened in Massachusetts. They need another state to join on. Virginia is sort of the bellwether state. Everybody also saw that he looked the part. Benjamin Rush, one of the famous founders, said, "He has so much martial dignity in his deportment that you distinguish him to be a general and a soldier from among 10,000 people." John Adams, his future vice president, and a man who would later become pretty jealous of Washington, placed his name in nomination. He wrote to his wife, Abigail, that Congress had made choice of the modest and virtuous, the amiable, generous, and brave George Washington. Washington accepted the job. He did so under protest. He said, quote, "Lest some unlucky event should happen unfavorable to my reputation, I beg it may be remembered by every gentleman in the room that I this day declare with the utmost sincerity I do not think myself equal to the command I am honored with." And he pledged not to take a salary for the entire war. Then he wrote back to his wife and he fibbed to her, "You may believe me, my dear Patsy, when I assure you in the most solemn manner that so far from seeking this appointment, I have used every endeavor in my power to avoid it." Yeah, not so much. He definitely wanted to be the commander-in-chief of America's armed forces. Well, as we continue here on the Ben Shapiro Show, we continue with the story of George Washington taking command of the Continental Army and leading Americans in battle against Great Britain during the Revolutionary War. You're listening to the Ben Shapiro Show.
Hear us streaming 24/7 at KCNR1460.com.
KCNR is proud to announce that we are now live at 96.5 FM, as well as online, and as always, heard on 1460 AM. Weekday mornings, wake up with the Sue McClain News Hour, followed by Free Fire Radio, your talk radio station at the epicenter of change in downtown Reading. 9 to noon, be informed and laugh along with Armstrong and Getty, the conscience of the nation. Noon to 3, find your financial peace with Dave Ramsey. 3 to 6, the hard-hitting constitutional expert, Mark Levin. Monday through Thursdays at 6 p.m., local shows feature everything from the paranormal to pop culture to unsung heroes of our area. 7 to 9, Ben Shapiro with an expanded program that brings the issues of the day to your radio. And finish your weekday with the Chris Plant Show, 10 p.m. to 1 a.m. KCNR, now on 96.5 FM, 1460 AM, and always online. More than ever, we're your locally owned, community-connected talk radio.
A jewel of the North State, a place we love to go and love being members.
The view, the best in the North State, from the restaurants, meeting rooms, and of course on the award-winning 18-hole golf course, Riverview Golf and Country Club. It's the place to belong.
The holiday season is here, so why not give the gift that keeps giving? Perhaps a social membership or golf lessons. Riverview Golf and Country Club has been providing home away from home entertainment. Find out how you can become a member today. Go to riverviewgolf.net. That's riverviewgolf.net.
For many people, their faith, their family, and their health are the most important things in their life. Every day, the work that I do influences these things. Children go to college, couples move into their first home, people retire, businesses start, and charities are supported. All of this in part because of the work I do. I can make complicated things clearer so people understand them. I can solve problems and find solutions. People need someone to put their interests first. And for many people, I am that someone. I can lend an ear, stand with you during life's ups and downs, and provide that advice at just the right time. That's why I love my job. That's why I'm a financial advisor, Susan Eastman, with Wells Fargo Advisors in Redding, California, 243-7561. Once again, this is Susan Eastman with Wells Fargo Advisors. I'd love to be your financial advisor. Please give me a call at 243-7561.
Did you know that the City of Reading has started licensing commercial cannabis activities within the city limits? Synergy is the first of the city's approved retailers to obtain licensure, bringing to the Reading area the most experienced retailer in the North State. They will ensure that your visit is both professional and comfortable. Access is simple and discreet. Synergy has a private 25-space parking lot at the back of the building. Synergy is located at 345 Hempstead Drive, Reading.
You know, it can be difficult to find a trustworthy, knowledgeable, and yet affordable auto repair shop. Advanced Automotive is a second-generation, locally owned, full-service repair shop serving our community since 1993, and one of only four AAA-approved auto repair shops in the Reading area. Advanced Automotive has a goal, and it's to keep it simple to have safe, reliable vehicles for our customers and our community. Call or come by to meet the crew who is here to serve you. 244-4423 at Advanced Automotive.
Colonoscopy is the most effective method of screening for colon cancer and is the only procedure that can both detect and prevent cancer in just one procedure. Take-home tests can miss up to 1 in 12 of colon cancers and most precancerous polyps. These tests do not prevent colon cancer. Only a colonoscopy can do that by removing polyps before they become cancerous. When caught early, the survival rate of colon cancer is 90%. This public service message is brought to you by Reading Endoscopy Center. Call them at 530-246-7000 or visit readingendoscopy.com.
As gun laws continue to tighten up across the country, Bastiani Arms will continue to provide our community with quality firearms, hard-to-find ammo, off-list fully built AR lower receivers, and the absolute best customer service. Get out of the grab-and-go box stores and come talk to a knowledgeable firearms specialist. The good guys at Bastiani Arms are real gun enthusiasts with two full-time gunsmiths on hand 5 days a week. Right now, Bastiani Arms is stocked up on hard to find ammo, 30-30, 38 Special, and 44 Magnum. More people than ever are exercising their rights to conceal and carry a firearm. Seth Stoke has over 20 years' experience in firearms and offers CCW classes, women-only CCW classes, and hunter education. Bastiani Arms has everything you need for firearms, and they appreciate you shopping local. Bastiani Arms, on the corner of Larkspur Lane and Wall Street in Reading. join the revolution.
Learn more about our shows and hosts. Check us out online at kcnr1460.com.
Welcome back to the Ben Shapiro Show.
We're going through the history of George Washington, our best president, our first president, and the father of the Republic. And we are up to the point in his life when he takes command of the Continental Army. So this is 1775. George Washington is still an incredibly young person in 1775. And he is 43 years old in 1775. And he is taking command of the entire American Continental Army, which he has lobbied for and then sort of fibbed to his wife about. He takes on the responsibility. He writes back to Martha. He's like, oh, I didn't want it. Yeah, he did. On July 3rd, 1775, Washington takes command of the Continental Army beneath a tree in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Today, the spot where he took command actually stands next to a softball field across the street from Harvard Law School. I know that because we used to play softball literally next to the cannon that marks the spot. He had less than 14,000 troops at the time, poorly provisioned. Washington described them as, quote, an exceedingly dirty and nasty people. Generally, the most indifferent kind of people I ever saw. They're all stragglers, essentially. So Washington has to choose his first move. His first move is the siege of Boston. The British had been trapped in Boston, which is the heart of the Revolution, since the Battle of Lexington and Concord, and Washington was ready to drive them out. He said, I shall feel no pain from the toil or the danger of the campaign, this is what he wrote to Martha. My unhappiness will flow from the uneasiness I know you will feel being left alone. Indeed, it would be 8 years until Washington returned to Mount Vernon. I don't think we take seriously enough what it is the founders had to go through in order to fight this revolution. John Adams was away from his wife for the better part of a decade in the middle of the revolution, being a diplomat. And unlike Franklin and Jefferson, who were doing whatever it was they tended to do on the side, Adams was not doing that stuff, and he was still away from his wife for like a decade. Washington waited until the waters around the Boston port froze so that the British could not bring in reinforcements. Then he set up his cannon on Dorchester Heights secretly overnight. The British general, whose name was William Howe, could only look up at the heights in amazement that the revolutionaries had done all of this right under his nose. He just waited for a dark night, and then he moved all the cannon up onto the heights so it was pointed down into the harbor. My God, he said, these fellows have done more work in one night than I could make my army do in 3 months. Facing the prospect of shelling from above, Howe then decides to evacuate Boston, which is the first major victory Washington has ever won as commander, ever. It would be over a year before he'd win another battle. His next spate of failures began in New York. Now, those failures really were not Washington's fault. New York was almost indefensible to a superior naval power, and the British were, in fact, the greatest naval power on earth. Still, Washington tried to defend Lower Manhattan with about 19,000 troops, and then he waited. Sure enough, the British show up, commanded by General William Howe. Howe tries to buy off the rebels with an offer of pardon, and Washington responds in full badass fashion, those who have committed no fault want no pardon, which is basically go to hell. But the British outplayed Washington. He put some of his troops on Brooklyn Heights, and he put some more of his troops on the Heights of Guam, but he didn't defend Jamaica Pass, which kind of cut between the two, figuring no one would use it, which was a really bad mistake. Howe found the pass. He led 10,000 troops through the pass to attack Brooklyn Heights from the rear. Washington's troops on the Heights of Guam fought a desperate action to try and buy time for the other troops to escape. Washington, watching the battle from afar, Washington famously said, good God, what brave fellows I must lose. But then the British make a mistake, so the Americans run away from New York, but the Brits make a mistake. Instead of pressing their advantage, Howe tells his troops to start digging trenches around the Brooklyn Heights. So while they're doing that, Washington sees his own chance, and he spirits 9,000 men away from Long Island. So kind of like the Battle of Dunkirk during the Second World War, Washington's retreat, his strategic retreat, ends up preserving the army. As always, Washington himself, personally, was the last one to leave because as the fog descended, covering the escape, he wanted to be the last guy making sure all of his people could get away. And Washington then keeps running. In October, just before winter descends, the British drive the Continentals from White Plains. The revolutionaries had lost virtually all of New York, and now they are forced to retreat to New Jersey. At this point, the cause seems lost, because winter is beginning. There's no time to launch a serious counterstroke against the British before the big snows come. And with the winter, the troops are going to go home to their family, leaving the cause behind. Unclear they're ever going to be able to regroup. This looks like the end of the revolution. This is when Washington learns that a garrison of Hessians, German troops, under British command, had located themselves at Trenton, New Jersey, just across the Delaware River. The river was freezing, and Washington's men were discouraged, but on Christmas, he orders a surprise attack. Now, as was true very often with Washington, the battle plan was really complicated, like far too complicated to ever work. He wanted three separate forces to cross the river with three separate missions. But only one group actually succeeds, and that is his own, with 2,400 soldiers crossing 10 miles north of Trenton and then attacking the garrison at dawn. But Washington has a problem. The British actually had a spy in Washington's ranks at the time. That spy funneled information to Colonel Johann Rall at Trenton, and he warned him to be alert. But Rall was puffed up by the British victories of the past few months, and he dismissed the threat. He said, let them come. Why defenses? We'll go at them with the bayonet. That was not Rall's only warning. Two American deserters, who were afraid that Washington was going to attack and fail, told Rall an attack was coming. Other Tories, American sympathizers with the British, said the same thing. But the Hessians didn't do anything because they figured the building storm, you'd be crazy to cross this river. They weren't totally wrong. It would take a crazy person to cross a freezing river in the middle of the night, in the middle of a quasi-hurricane. That crazy guy was George Washington. He pushed his men across the river. He had them bring along 18 cannons, some weighing nearly 2,000 pounds. And then, even though he was 3 hours behind schedule, he pushed them on. When he was told that one of his generals was worried that the wet had already ruined the gunpowder for the cannon, Washington replied, tell General Sullivan to use the bayonet. I am resolved to take Trenton. Still, Washington's plan was nearly foiled one more time when a small American force preemptively attacked Trenton by accident. But after Rall fought it off, he thought he was done for the day. Not so much. Washington's forces quickly forced Rall's surrender. Then Washington retreated back into Pennsylvania. Interesting side note, one of the only Americans wounded during the battle was a guy named James Monroe, who nearly bled to death. He'd later become the fifth president of the United States. If you know the famous portrait of Washington crossing the Delaware, that's the guy holding the flag in that portrait. The victory at Trenton was just the beginning of the counterstrike. Just a few days after defeating the Hessians in Trenton, the British came after Washington. Now they were led by General Charles Cornwallis, who you'll want to remember because he becomes important later. Cornwallis decided that the best way to defeat Washington was to attack him by pinning him to the Delaware River with the river at his back. Washington had other ideas. So he used a trick of ancient battle. Washington was fond of using sort of biblical tricks. Washington kept campfires burning all night to deceive Cornwallis into thinking that the Americans had remained in their position. Then he led his entire force around the British toward their supply lines. The defenders of Princeton on the British side had been called by Cornwallis to attack Washington. So the supply lines ran through Princeton, and all of the British were told to attack Washington, so they kind of left it abandoned. Washington went right around them, right toward Princeton. When they spotted Washington, they tried to race him back to Princeton, and initially they exceeded. Not only that, they put the Americans to retreat. Brigadier General Hugh Mercer's line was broken. He himself was bayoneted repeatedly. A lot of the British actually thought that this American general, Hugh Mercer, was Washington. They thought they had killed Washington. Then Washington stepped in. He personally took command. His own aide, John Fitzgerald, thought Washington would almost certainly be shot to death. Apparently, Washington himself was only 90 feet from the British lines. 90 feet, the distance from home to first base. Riding his white horse, so he was standing out, he shouted to his men, parade with us, my brave fellows. There's but a handful of the enemy, and we shall have it them directly. And then Washington takes off on his horse toward the enemy lines, shouting, it's a fine fox chase, my boys. The guy was just a badass. I mean, what is there to say? The battle ends on the Princeton University campus. The British actually hold up in Nassau Hall. According to legend, they only surrendered when an American cannonball sailed directly through the head of King George II in a portrait hanging on the wall. Those victories were followed by a bunch of bad defeats for Washington. At the battles of Brandywine and Germantown, the former battle resulted in the British occupying Philadelphia. But the battles did establish a crucial fact. The American army was not going away. And Washington handled the army with a will of iron. He took seriously Frederick the Great's injunction to shoot deserters. A coward, Washington wrote, when taught to believe that if he breaks his ranks, will be punished with death by his own party, will take his chance against the enemy. A few years later, when Washington faced down a mutiny, he actually instructed his colonel to shoot the insurrectionists. He said, I wish you to compel the mutineers to unconditional submission. The more decisively you are able to act, the better. But here's the thing about Washington. It wasn't just that he was compelling people. It wasn't the Stalin at Stalingrad telling the Russians they better charge or he's going to shoot them. People knew that Washington was leading them as well. During the winter of 1777, on the heels of defeat, Washington led his men on a march to Valley Forge, some 20 miles north of Philadelphia, and then Washington stayed with them. Through the snow and the cold, he drove them. He improved them with the help of a young French nobleman named Marquis de Lafayette and Baron Friedrich von Steuben. His men didn't have proper clothing. A third of them had no shoes. His quartermaster said he had only 25 barrels of flour and a bit of salt pork for the entire army. At the time, Washington writes to the president of the Continental Congress. He says, the entire army might dissolve. Typhoid and dysentery run rampant through the camp. Some 2,000 American troops die during the course of the winter. And then there's another legend. I'm going to get to the legend in just one second. But first,
you need the perfect gift for this holiday season. What is it? More of me. More of us here over at the Daily Wire. We're talking about a Daily Wire membership, 25% off from now until January 1st. All Insider Plus gift memberships are 25% off. That means your loved one will get all the fantastic perks, plus the majestic Leftist Tears tumbler. Also, be sure to check out the Daily Wire store. You can stock up on official Daily Wire hoodies, T-shirts, sweaters, and more. It's a perfect place for your holiday shopping needs. You ever wonder what the man behind this deep, mellifluous voice looks like? You want to listen to the show at your desk while you pretend to do work? This is the only way to get all 3 hours of The Ben Shapiro Show on demand. No other way. So head on over to DailyWire.com, become an insider, join tens of thousands of fans in supporting the largest conservative podcast in America. Again, that is 25% off all of those Insider Plus gift memberships this holiday season. Give them a gift they will thank you for all year long. Go to DailyWire.com/gift to get 25% off. Again, DailyWire.com/gift.
Okay, so in the middle of this horrible winter at Valley Forge, there's this legend that crops up. By legend, one day there's a Quaker Tory, his name is Isaac Potts, and he's walking through the woods. And here's what he writes. In that woods, pointing to a close in view, I heard a plaintive sound as of a man at prayer. I tied my horse to a sapling and went quietly into the woods, and to my astonishment, I saw the great George Washington on his knees, alone, with his sword on one side and his cocked hat on the other. He was at prayer to the God of the armies, beseeching to impose with his divine aid, as it was a crisis, and the cause of the country and of humanity and of the world. Such a prayer I never heard from the lips of man. I left him alone praying. I went home and told my wife. I saw a sight and heard today what I never saw or heard before, and just related to her what I had seen and heard and observed. We never thought a man could be a soldier and a Christian, but if there is one in the world, it is Washington. She was also astonished. We thought it was the cause of God and America could prevail. He then put me out his right hand and said, I turned right about and became a Whig, meaning he started backing the American cause. Washington told his aides that he would share in the hardship and partake of every inconvenience, and he did. By the time the army left Valley Forge, they were actually better provisioned and trained than they had ever been before. When they did leave, there's an incident that occurred that deepened the myth of Washington. Washington's forces sought to harass the army of General Henry Clinton, who was heading from Philadelphia to New York. Washington sent ahead General Charles Lee to lead the fighting, and he told Lee to hold Clinton in place until Washington's entire army could arrive. Instead, Lee retreated. Washington apparently cursed him out so viciously that General Charles Scott said, quote, the leaves shook on the tree. Washington then took personal command of the troops. According to Lafayette, he said that Washington's personal presence stopped the retreat. Alexander Hamilton, who you'll recall from the musical, as well as history, Washington's top aide, said other officers have great merit in performing their parts well, but he directed the whole with the skill of a master workman. The British ended up fleeing for New York. Washington had a much-needed victory. And there's another hard winter. General Benedict Arnold betrayed the young republic and fled to the side of the British. Washington had to execute a British spy, Major John Andre, who was executed after the British refused to trade Benedict Arnold for John Andre. If you ever watch the AMC series Turn, they do a really good job of portraying what happened there. By now, Washington had already despaired of taking back New York. Instead, he decided to unite with French forces and capture the British army at Yorktown, which was the Southern command. General Cornwallis, the commander at Yorktown, had been running roughshod through the South, but Cornwallis decided, big mistake, to hole up on the peninsula of the York and James Rivers and wait for reinforcements. And it's there that Washington strikes. The siege of Yorktown ends with the surrender of some 7,000 British troops on October 19th, 1781. Now, people think that ended the war. It didn't. The war continued for another 2 years, but the momentum was now in Washington's favor. And he would need it, because by 1783, Washington's officers were tired of being in the Continental Army. They were sick of the Congress, which refused to pay them on time and had refused them back pay. His officers actually began to circulate a letter at Newburgh, New York, that they planned to send to Congress announcing a revolt against the Continental Congress, right as the Americans were about to win the war. And this is when Washington steps in again. He first issues an order forbidding unsanctioned meetings, and then he calls his own for March 15, 1783. And there he ripped into the officers. He said, gentlemen, by an anonymous summons, an attempt has been made to convene you together. How inconsistent with the rules of propriety. How unmilitary. He then begged his officers to place a full confidence in the purity of the intentions of Congress. And then came one of the most famous Washington moments. He reaches into the breast pocket to read a letter he has received from Congress. And he takes out his spectacles and fumbles with them. And then in one of the most famous lines in American history, he says, gentlemen, you must pardon me. I have grown old in the service of my country and now find that I am growing blind. The officers start crying. Everybody recognizes that Washington has given his entire life for this. And the mutiny dissolves. And when we return, I'm going to tell the rest of the story of George Washington. You're listening to The Ben Shapiro Show.
Individuals and businesses with tax problems, listen carefully. If you owe over $10,000 in back taxes or have unfiled tax returns, U.S. Tax Shield can help you take back control. The IRS can seize your bank accounts, garnish your paycheck, close your business, and file criminal charges. Our team of tax attorneys can stop collections and get you protected. U.S. Tax Shield offers a price protection guaranteed quote to get you protected today. U.S. Tax Shield is A-plus rated with the BBB, so call 800-466-9625. U.S. Tax Shield, 800-466-9625.
I'm Shelley Palmer.
I'm Ross Martin.
And you're listening to Think About This.
Is your digital life overwhelming you?
It says, and I quote, hashtag no phone for a year.
I'd like you and I to be there on that last day. She gets the check for $100,000 and she tackles somebody for an iPhone.
That's exactly right. Then give me your phone.
So welcome to Think About This.
The more you listen,
the less you know.
Listen and subscribe to Think About This. Free wherever you get your podcasts. From the Westwood One Podcast Network, where the conversation starts.
Attention all authors. Page Publishing is looking for authors. Have you written a book and want to get it published? Page Publishing will get your book into bookstores and for sale online at Amazon, Apple iTunes, and other outlets. They handle all aspects of the publishing process for you. Printing, cover art, publicity, copyright, and editing. Call 800-501-3689 now for your free author submission kit. That's 800-501-3689 for your free author submission kit. Again, 800-501-3689.
Are you looking for senior care for your mom or dad but don't know where to start? Hi, I'm Jen London with A Place for Mom. Nobody knows your parent or loved one better than you, and nobody knows senior living better than the experts at A Place for Mom. They've helped thousands of families find the right place for their mom or dad.
I was so glad that I called A Place for Mom. My advisor really listened and was truly my partner in finding senior care for my dad. She went out of her way to get to know him as a person and was always there whenever I had a question.
The senior living advisors at A Place for Mom partner with thousands of families every month, listening and offering local knowledge and advice to help find the best senior living communities across the country. And it's a free service. Here's the number.
Call A Place for Mom at 1-800-469-0286.
There's a place for answers, A Place for Mom. Call today.
Call A Place for Mom at 1-800-469-0286. That's 1-800-469-0286.
If you are behind on your bills, then this message is for you. How would you like to have a large portion of your credit card debt or medical bills forgiven? National Credit Card Relief would like to give you free information on a proven debt forgiveness program. It's not bankruptcy. It's not consolidation. This special program actually wipes clean the portion of your debt that is forgiven. Call for your free forgiveness information now.
800-291-6670. That's 800-291-6670. Don't wait. Call 800-291-6670. Not available in North Dakota.
Welcome back. This is the Ben Shapiro Show. We are telling the story of George Washington, and we are all the way up to the end of the war. Now, when the war comes to an end with an American victory, Washington does the hardest thing any hero has ever done. He steps down. It's an unbelievable thing when you think about how incredible that is. Here's the most powerful man in America, bar none, not close, and he just walks away. This was utterly unexpected by most of the world. King George III famously conversed with the painter named Benjamin West. He asked West what Washington would do were America to be declared independent. And West said he believed that Washington would retire to a private situation. The king said that if Washington did, he would be the greatest man in the world. And that's exactly what Washington did. On December 22nd, 1783, there was a dinner held in his honor at which Washington danced in every set so that the ladies might have the pleasure of dancing with him, or as has been since been handsomely expressed, to get a touch of him. Washington was famously fond of dancing. The next day he addressed Congress, and with great emotion he said, "Having now finished the work assigned me, I retire from the great theater of action, and bidding an affectionate farewell to this august body, under whose orders I have so long acted, I here offer my commission and take my leave of all the employments of public life." American painter John Trumbull noted the effect of Washington's resignation on the global opinion. He said it, quote, "excites the astonishment and admiration of this part of the world. 'Tis a conduct so novel, so inconceivable to people who, far from giving up the powers they possess, are willing to convulse the empire to acquire more." It's no wonder Thomas Jefferson later wrote, "The moderation and virtue of a single character probably prevented this revolution from being closed, as most others have, by a subversion of the liberty it was intended to establish." Soon after, Washington was called back in service. By 1787, he was elected unanimously to chair the Constitutional Convention. And then, on February 4th, 1789, he was unanimously elected president. And he was a fantastic president. Not only
did he ably unify a fractious country. When crisis struck, he took action. When his Treasury Secretary proposed an excise tax on whiskey in 1791, frontier Americans rebelled. This is the Whiskey Rebellion. So in 1794, after attempts to mollify the population, Washington got his uniform back on, and he got back on his horse, and he said that people who had threatened the government agents, he said, you better not be held to abet, aid, or comfort the insurgents, as they will answer the contrary at their peril. The rebels, figuring Washington was coming, immediately dispersed. The two men caught and found guilty of treason were then pardoned by Washington. In 1796, Washington, now aged 64, having devoted his entire adult life to the spirit of his, to the service of his country, gave the nation he fathered one last message. His farewell address is one of the great documents in American history. It's a masterful tribute to what it means to be an American and an extraordinary expression of the American mind and spirit. Washington begins his farewell address by celebrating the fact that the newborn United States could live on without his help. And he thanked the people of America for their support, praying that, quote, heaven may continue to you the choicest tokens of its beneficence. But he didn't stop there. Instead, he warned the people against disunion. He urged that Americans should cherish a cordial, habitual, and immovable attachment to America. What created American unity? He said the social fabric did. He explained that patriotism should unite the American people because we were already united by the same religion, manners, habits, and political principles. You have in a common cause fought and triumphed together. The independence and liberty you possess are the work of joint councils and joint efforts of common dangers, sufferings, and successes. He warns it against changing the Constitution too much. He said experience is the surest standard by which to test the real tendency of the existing Constitution of a country, which is a very anti-French Revolution sentiment. The French were basically saying, let's just overturn every institution based on theory. And Washington was saying, well, why don't you hold up and wait to see how experience plays out? He also warned against the spirit of faction. He meant people motivated by group self-interest, which could be bent toward revenge and power-seeking. He said that all of this was a fire not to be quenched. It demands a uniform vigilance to prevent its bursting into a flame lest, instead of warming, it should consume. He warned against the growth of the branches of government, against blowing out the national debt, against creating permanent alliances without resort to underlying common interests. And what exactly would prevent all these evils from taking place? He said the people animated by religion and morality. He said, in vain would that man claim the tribute of patriotism who should labor to subvert these great pillars of human happiness, these firmest props of the duties of men and citizens. The mere politician, equally with the pious man, ought to respect and cherish them. He means religion and morality. A volume could not trace all their connections with private and public felicity. Let it simply be asked, where is the security for property, for reputation, for life, if the sense of religious obligation deserts the oaths which are the instruments of investigation in courts of justice? And let us with caution indulge in the supposition that morality can be maintained without religion. Whatever may be conceded to the influence of refined education on minds of peculiar structure, reason and experience both forbid us to expect that national morality can prevail in exclusion of religious principle. It is substantially true that virtue or morality is a necessary spring of popular government. The rule indeed extends with more or less force to every species of free government. He says, don't tear down religion, don't tear down morality, or you're going to get something really bad. And Washington would not really have time to enjoy his retirement. After leaving office in 1797, he finally returned to Mount Vernon. And there, on December 12, 1799, he went out on horseback to survey his farm. He'd been healthy his entire life, essentially. It began to rain. Washington didn't come in out of the rain until he was soaked. Instead of changing out of his soaked clothes, Washington, a man of manners above all, decided to eat dinner while still in his wet clothes. He woke up with a sore throat. It got worse and worse. Doctors came and they bled him, and that basically killed him. It wasn't the disease, it was the doctors. This exacerbated the problems. Doctors believed that he died of hypovolemia.
From the Pacific Justice Institute, this is The Legal Edge, defending your rights as a Christian, a parent, and a citizen. Here's Brad Dickus.
In a recent speech, Attorney General William Barr strongly underscored the religious foundations of America. He said the founders saw religious liberty as the scaffolding on which they hung a free government. Well, Mr. Barr reminds us that free government only works for religious people who know there is a transcendent moral order preceding state or man-made law. He is concerned that militant secularists not only promote their own view, but seek to silence the religious voice. Folks, Pacific Justice Institute shares this concern. Become a partner today to help PJI defend the religious voice. Visit PJI.org.
The Pacific Justice Institute provides legal representation to individuals without charge. Learn more at PacificJustice.org. That's PacificJustice.org.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice.
Shasta Regional Medical Center.
News this hour from townhall.com. I'm Gordon Griffin. The U.S. military is providing a few details about the death of a Special Forces soldier in Afghanistan this week. Here is correspondent Ben Thomas.
A spokesman for U.S. forces in Afghanistan says Sergeant First Class Michael Goble was with his unit when its members discovered an undisclosed amount of Taliban weapons in Kunduz province Monday. Goble was killed and an Afghan service member wounded by an explosion as they were clearing out the cache. The Taliban had claimed it targeted the group with a roadside bomb.
A jetliner with 98 people aboard struggled to get airborne and crashed shortly after takeoff Friday in Kazakhstan, killing at least 12 people. The search for a helicopter carrying seven people to one of the most rugged and remote coastlines in Hawaii has ended in tragedy Friday. In the mountainous area on the island of Kauai, at least six people reported to have perished. Authorities say more than a dozen people were injured when a nitrogen line ruptured at a Beechcraft aircraft manufacturing facility in Wichita, Kansas today and caused part of the building to collapse. An emergency medical services official says 11 patients were taken to area hospitals. It can fly 27 times the speed of sound. Russia has announced the unveiling of its avant-garde hypersonic missile.
The idea is that you put a sort of glide vehicle on the end of a regular intercontinental ballistic missile. You shoot it up out of the Earth's atmosphere, and then the glide vehicle is released. It literally surfs or skims along the outer atmosphere of the Earth towards its target. And the crucial thing about it, the name hypersonic tells you one thing, it's very, very fast indeed. But the other crucial thing is it's very maneuverable. And that means this is a form of nuclear weapon that it's very difficult, if not impossible, for existing anti-ballistic missile defenses to knock down.
BBC correspondent Jonathan Marcus. More on these stories at townhall.com.
January 10th.
They convicted an innocent man.
Michael B. Jordan.
Your life is still meaningful, and I'm going to do everything possible to keep them from taking it.
Academy Award winner Jamie Foxx.
You don't know what it is down there. You're guilty from the moment you're born.
And Academy Award winner Brie Larson.
I don't want my son growing up knowing that his mom stopped doing what was right just because she was scared.
You ain't quitting, is you?
No, sir.
Just Mercy, rated PG-13, may be inappropriate for children under 13. Now playing in select theaters. Everywhere January 10th. Directed by Destin Daniel Cretton.
You wouldn't put a square peg in a round hole, so why would you deploy a traditional firewall in a modern decentralized network? Firewalls have new requirements for businesses leveraging SaaS-based applications and public cloud platforms like AWS, Azure, and Google Cloud. We're in the cloud generation now, so your firewalls have to be engineered to fit right in. Reclaim your cloud network. Try a Barracuda Cloud Generation Network or Application Firewall free at barracuda.com/firewalls.
Democrats and Republicans in the Senate are hoping for at least a few defections from the other party in the upcoming impeachment trial. Capitol Hill correspondent Bob Agnew reports.
The outcome is hardly in doubt, with Democrats coming nowhere near the 67 votes they would need to convict President Trump on the two articles of impeachment. The real question is who can walk away claiming their position enjoyed bipartisan support. The most likely Democrat defectors are Senators Joe Manchin of West Virginia and Doug Jones of Alabama, both from very pro-Trump states, and Jones facing re-election next year. Democrats, meanwhile, have their sights set on vocal Trump critic Mitt Romney, Barbara Mikulski of Alaska, and Susan Collins of Maine. Bob Agnew reporting.
Authorities say gunfire inside of a suburban Denver mall has killed a 17-year-old boy and sent shoppers scrambling for safety. Shooting happened inside the town center of Aurora on Friday afternoon. Police spokesman says no one that has been arrested, but there's no ongoing threat at the mall. News and analysis at townhall.com. A federal judge upholds Georgia's efforts to remove almost 100,000 voters from its rolls. Can proceed. Here's correspondent George Bonzani with the report.
That issue was a Georgia law that voters' names could be removed from rolls due to no contact with the state for a statutory time and conditions for nearly 7 years. The 2018 governor's race sparked the issue. Democrat Stacey Abrams lost to eventual winner Republican Brian Kemp, who had served as the Secretary of State when 1.4 million voter registrations were canceled over the prior 6 years. The U.S. District Judge ruled that Abrams' advocacy group improperly asked for a federal interpretation of state law and that the group hadn't proved violations of constitutional rights. At the same time, he ordered Georgia to more effectively warn those in danger of removal, as some 20,000 names had to be reinstated during the litigation. George Manzani reporting.
More on these stories at townhall.com. I'm Gordon Griffin.
Hi, this is Linda Bott, and let me tell you about our North State Now show on Thursday nights at 6 p.m. right here on KCNR. The first Thursday of the month will be yours truly, covering arts and entertainment and all kinds of fun stuff. The second Thursday will be Michelle Slade, highlighting and interviewing North State heroes. The third Thursday is James Masada and Rhonda Alvey, bringing you all things with Enjoy the Magazine and Enjoy the Store. And the fourth Thursday from Shasta Regional Medical Center is Dr. Orna Gill, covering all things women's health. The title sponsor for North State Now is the Reading Civic Auditorium, also brought to you by the Black Bear Diner, Shasta Regional Medical Center, and Carlene's Restaurant and Bar, located at 1100 Center Street. That's North State Now, right here on KCNR, 96.5 FM and 1460 AM. 6 p.m., North State Now.
Welcome back. This is the Ben Shapiro Show. Joining us on the line to talk about the impeachment hearings and the problems that President Trump has had with the National Security Council is Michael Anton, senior fellow at Claremont Institute, also former staffer in the Trump administration, of course, most famous for his authorship of the Flight 93 essay in the 2016 election. Michael, thanks so much for joining the Ben Shapiro Show. Really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
So why don't we begin with an article that you wrote for the Daily Caller talking about the president and the gaps that he has with his own NSC. Those have become perfectly obvious, obviously, over the course of this impeachment proceeding, where the media seem to suggest that the president having a disagreement with the strategy of his own NSC is somehow an impeachable offense.
Right. So the main point of the article is to say that, look, the NSC has this tiny budget, which means the president can't hire the people that he wants. So he has to take them from the permanent bureaucracy. And this is true of every president. This has been the way the NSC has been run for decades. But it's particularly harmful to a Republican because the government is staffed with Democrats and liberals. And it's really particularly harmful to someone like President Trump, who's an anti-establishment figure, who's a disruptor, who's coming outside the Washington consensus. So he comes in with new ideas. He wants to change things. He's questioned a lot of the foreign policy of the United States as it's been going. And he has a difficult time implementing what he wants because he's not allowed to hire people who agree with him and who want to implement what he wants. In fact, he's forced to borrow people from permanent Washington, most of whom don't agree with him and want to do the opposite of what he wants. And so you get this crazy parade of people. This has been obvious to anyone who's ever worked in the NSC, as I have twice, but now it should be obvious to the general public, where you had a bunch of people, not all of them, but I would say the majority of the people who testified in the Democrats' impeachment hearings, based on the leaks that we've gotten in their opening statements, most of them are not saying, in fact, I don't think any of them said, we think he did something impeachable or he broke the law. What they're saying is, his Ukraine policy is all wrong, and it had me alarmed, and we need to get back on track of cementing a strategic alliance between the U.S. and Ukraine. And all the press coverage in Washington is saying, hallelujah, Hosanna, absolutely true, but no one is saying, wait a minute, he got elected to change stuff. You didn't get elected. You're just in that job because you're an unelected member of the bureaucracy. Why do you get to decide, right? Well, the remedy is give the NSC some real money. Its budget is very small, under $15 million. Give it some real money, say $200 million. And let the president hire people he wants. Now, $200 million is not that much. I hate to say this. It's a terrible thing to say, but it's true. $200 million is not that much money in Washington terms when the federal budget is well over $4 trillion. And to give the NSC $200 million so that the president can hire the people he wants, who agree with him, who are going to implement his positions, makes sense. Obviously, this is less of a problem for a Democratic president. Because a Democratic president, who's hiring a bunch of permanent bureaucrats is basically already hiring people he agrees with, which is why the Washington establishment doesn't see this as a problem. They'd like to just keep it going. It's a check on Republicans, and it enables Democrats, right? Nothing to fix. Mm-hmm. But I do see it as a problem, and anybody who's a conservative, who's a Republican, who's a Trump supporter should see it as a problem.
I mean, I certainly favor the idea that the president should actually be in charge of his own foreign policy, and the idea that you have people inside the president's cabinet who are basically seeing themselves as check on the president's foreign policy. I mean, the American people elect a person. That person gets to set the policy.
With that said, let's make the case from the other side, not with regard to funding of the NSC, but with regard to President Trump's behavior with regard to Ukraine. So if the idea is that President Trump shifted his policy on Ukraine, that he did so for good reason, then the question becomes, why do you think that he shifted his policy on Ukraine? Because up until earlier this year, the president had been providing deadly aid to Ukraine in contradistinction, to the Obama administration policy of very, very soft support for Ukraine. Trump's administration had taken a much harder line in favor of Ukraine and against Russia, particularly with regard to deadly aid facing down the problems in Crimea. What do you think triggered President Trump to shift that policy?
Well, first of all, the only shift that took place was initially. He hasn't shifted it recently. I was there for the first year of the Trump administration and was around the president many times as he expressed skepticism about giving lethal aid to Ukraine. He was concerned that it might draw us into a broader conflict with Russia inadvertently. He would ask questions about why is it every time I'm speaking as if I were him now, why is it every time that I talk to a European leader, they tell me you have to do more for Ukraine, but they don't do anything themselves? You know, why is this an American problem more than a European problem? The Europeans are trying to pass it off to me, and they don't want to do anything, which I think is also a legitimate question. And then he would be given reports about systemic corruption in the government of Ukraine and say, okay, so we give them all this money or we give them this aid, how do I know it's going to be spent or used wisely? And he was very reluctant to do it. And I would say spent about 6 months or so thinking it over, listening to all the arguments of his advisors as the policy worked through. And eventually he decided to do it, right, against his initial inclination. That was sometime in the summer of 2017. I'm not aware of him ever changing that once he began that policy. We've seen a report that apparently the aid was held up for some indeterminate period of time. The Democrats are trying to impeach him on the ground that was explicitly linked to a quid pro quo, that we weren't going to give any aid unless an investigation was launched. We'll see if they can prove that allegation. They haven't yet. The phone call, what people are calling the transcript, is actually called a telcon, but leave that aside. The phone call transcript doesn't demonstrate that, right? And we do know that the aid was released and that the Ukrainians never launched an investigation, either as a quid pro quo or independently. So I think that's going to be a hard thing for the Democratic Party and for the impeachers to establish, but they can keep trying.
Well, Michael, since you know the president, you served inside the administration. I've offered the theory of his behavior here with regards to mentioning Burisma and Joe Biden. The Democrats have basically suggested that this entire impeachment hinges on President Trump wanted to get Joe Biden in the lead up to 2020. It seems to me that if you read that quasi transcript, if you listen to the statements that the president has made, if you follow the president at all, he has this sort of miasma of ideas about Ukraine. It seems like he sort of just wrapped them all up into a ball and then said, I'm withholding aid from Ukraine until you solve issues X, Y, and Z. Some of those may have been founded on bad ideas, like the idea that Hillary Clinton servers in Ukraine. But it was not about Biden specifically. It was about his perception of corruption, however, based on bad material that may have been funneled to him by Rudy Giuliani.
I would say he has, I can restate this. He has basically three concerns, and he has had from the beginning about Ukraine. Number one, he doesn't want it to lead to a wider conflict between the U.S. and Russia inadvertently. However low probability that might be, it would be very high impact were it to happen. Number two, he wonders why this is first and foremost an American issue or an American problem when the Europeans, who are much more concerned about it and are much closer to it, do less than we do, much less, in some cases nothing, and constantly ask us to do more. And three, you're absolutely right. He is concerned about Ukrainian corruption and wondering why, when we have so many problems here at home that we need to sort out, we should be spending hundreds of millions of dollars on a country on the other side of the world whose interests don't perfectly align with ours and which may have a corrupt government and spend the money unwisely. As for Biden, I just think this is going to be another thing where the Democrats are going to have a hard time convincing the American people that it's impeachable. I have a long article on impeachment coming out in the next Claremont Review of Books, and I make the following argument, which I think is perfectly reasonable, right? What Trump is asking about in that specific instance is, why did Joe Biden's son get paid a lot of money for apparently doing nothing and having no expertise in either the country, the language, the industry, or things like that? Now, we know this kind of thing happens all the time with connected insiders. Politically connected insiders get paid lots of money, sometimes by domestic American interests, sometimes by foreign interests, to do what appears to be not a whole lot. What are they getting paid for? They're getting paid for their access, for their connections, and so on. Is that legally, technically corrupt? I don't know. I guess that's case by case. It sure looks corrupt, though. And it's amazing to me that the Washington establishment is pouncing on Trump for asking about that, just for asking about it, as if it's improper for him to say, hey, were you guys doing something corrupt with a former vice president and possible future president, and then you allowed him to strong-arm you out of continuing the investigation? I don't know what really happened, but that sounds pretty bad. Why don't you, you know, look into it? I think it's important that we know. I think, as an American citizen, it is important that we know. I personally would want to know if the vice president's son were paid a lot of money by a foreign government to do nothing or little, that he had any expertise or background to do, just so that that government could get access to senior government officials. I think everybody who is a citizen of the United States should want to know about that and should be concerned about that happening. That's an abuse of our system, and we shouldn't tolerate it if it happens.
So I guess, Michael, the question that people on the left, people who are in favor of the impeachment, would ask is, okay, so if Trump was so concerned about Biden and Hunter Biden, then why not just go to William Barr? I mean, the AG is already investigating the origins of Trump-Russia. He's investigating Ukrainian interference in the 2016 election. Why not go through domestic law enforcement agencies instead of allegedly, apparently he supposedly told Gordon Sondland, the ambassador to EU, that he wanted Ukraine to make a public statement about investigating Hunter and Joe Biden?
I mean, for all we know, he has had that conversation with the attorney general. The call telcon slash transcript suggests that he had has had a conversation with the attorney general, or at least suggests that he intended to. But the bottom line here, though, is there's only so much that U.S. Department of Justice, that U.S. investigators can find out without the cooperation of a foreign government if the specific acts in question happened in that foreign country or in channels run by that foreign government, right? So if you really want to find out, you can ask the attorney general, you can ask the American officials to find out as much as they can, but eventually they're going to hit roadblocks that they're not going to be able to overcome without the cooperation of the foreign government where the activity actually took place.
Well, the fact that the president of the United States continues to be under such severe investigation, despite the fact that there's a lot of vagary as to motive and exactly what he was doing, is, again, demonstrative of the gap between him and his own national security team, which has plagued the administration throughout. Michael Anton, thanks so much for stopping by. Really appreciate it. Senior fellow at Claremont Institute. Go check out his latest column over at Daily Caller. Michael, appreciate
your
time.
Thank you.
Well, coming up,
bye.
We're going to take some questions from the Ben Shapiro Show mailbag. We'll get to all that in just a second. First, you need the perfect gift for this holiday season. What is it? More of me. More of us here over at the Daily Wire. We're talking about a Daily Wire membership, 25% off from now until January 1st. All Insider Plus gift memberships are 25% off. That means your loved one will get all the fantastic perks, plus the majestic Leftist Tears tumbler, and you will get the savings. As a member, you can listen to all 3 hours of this radio show on demand when you become a Daily Wire Insider. Plus, as an all-access member, you can take part in our awesome Ask Me Anything-style discussion feature, where you can log in and talk to me, our other hosts, our writers, even special guests during live online chats. Also, be sure to check out the Daily Wire store. You can stock up on official Daily Wire hoodies, T-shirts, sweaters, and more. It's a perfect place for your holiday shopping needs. You ever wonder what the man behind this deep, mellifluous voice looks like? You want to listen to the show at your desk while you pretend to do work? This is the only way to get all 3 hours of the Ben Shapiro Show on demand. No other way. So head on over to DailyWire.com, become an insider, join tens of thousands of fans in supporting the largest conservative podcast in America. Again, that is 25% off all of those Insider Plus gift memberships this holiday season. Give them a gift they will thank you for all year long. Go to DailyWire.com/gift to get 25% off. Again, DailyWire.com/gift. Alrighty, coming up, we're going to take some questions from the Ben Shapiro Show mailbag. You're listening to the Ben Shapiro Show.
Are you looking for senior care for your mom or dad but don't know where to start? Hi, I'm Jen London with A Place for Mom. Nobody knows your parent or loved one better than you, and nobody knows senior living better than the experts at A Place for Mom. They've helped thousands of families find the right place for their mom or dad.
I was so glad that I called A Place for Mom. My advisor really listened and was truly my partner in finding senior care for my dad. She went out of her way to get to know him as a person and was always there whenever I had a question.
The senior living advisors at A Place for Mom partner with thousands of families every month, listening and offering local knowledge and advice to help find the best senior living communities across the country. And it's a free service. Here's the number.
Call A Place for Mom at 1-800-469-0286.
There's a place for answers, a place for mom. Call today.
Call A Place for Mom at 1-800-469-0286. That's 1-800-469-0286.
If you are behind on your bills, then this message is for you. How would you like to have a large portion of your credit card debt or medical bills forgiven? National Credit Card Relief would like to give you free information on a proven debt forgiveness program. It's not bankruptcy. It's not consolidation. This special program actually wipes clean the portion of your debt that is forgiven. Call for your free forgiveness information now. 800-291-6670. That's 800-291-6670. Don't wait. Call 800-291-6670. Not available in North Dakota.
If you have hard water, the limescale not only leaves white spots, it clogs pipes and breaks down appliances, costing you hundreds of dollars in energy and wear. Eliminate limescale and other water issues like brown staining, bad odors, and lead with HydroCare water products available from Wave Home Solutions. Wave's affordable systems don't use salts or chemicals. You'll love the way your water tastes, smells, and looks. Satisfaction guaranteed. For more information, go to WaveBestWater.com. That's WaveBestWater.com.
Attention all authors. Page Publishing is looking for authors. Have you written a book and want to get it published? Page Publishing will get your book into bookstores and for sale online at Amazon, Apple iTunes, and other outlets. They handle all aspects of the publishing process for you. Printing, cover art, publicity, copyright, and editing. Call 800-501-3689 now for your free author submission kit. That's 800-501-3689 for your free author submission kit. Again, 800-501-3689.
I'm Shelley Palmer.
I'm Ross Martin.
And you're listening to Think About This.
Is your digital life overwhelming you?
It says, and I quote, hashtag, no phone for a year.
I'd like you and I to be there on that last day. She gets the check for $100,000, and she tackles somebody for an iPhone.
That's exactly right. Then give your phone.
So welcome to Think About This.
The more you listen,
the less you know.
Listen and subscribe to Think About This. Free wherever you get your podcasts. From the Westwood One Podcast Network, where the conversation starts.
Welcome back. This is the Ben Shapiro Show. So time for some of your questions from the mailbag. So let's jump right in because many of you have written in, particularly if you're a subscriber to Daily Wire. If you subscribe over at Daily Wire, then it turns out that you get to send me messages via the mailbag, and there's a good shot that they get read on air. John says, hey, Ben, love the show. While there are a plethora of arguments against socialized health care, the cost of health care as it is exorbitantly high for many people, myself included. I can't get insurance through my work, and I have a $6,500 deductible with the plan I can't afford. My question is, how can the cost of healthcare be reduced without government intervention? Thanks. Well, okay, so there's really two groups of people who need health insurance. There's healthy people and people who already have a pre-existing condition. If you have a pre-existing condition, you're not actually seeking to buy health insurance. You're seeking to buy a plan that is going to pay for your condition. Because the fact is, that's not insurance, right? You don't buy fire insurance after your house is on fire. You buy it before your house is on fire. So if you're healthy, the question is, how do we get enough healthy people to sign up for health insurance to help defray the cost from people who have pre-existing conditions? And the answer to that, historically speaking, was social institutions, right? You got together with all the members of your church, you created a healthcare co-op, and then everybody got insured as a group. And that helped defray some of the costs of the insurance company. Well, those sorts of things still do exist in the private sector, and you can go look for them. I mean, they really are out there. These organizations, private organizations, where people get together and then act as a risk pool. Because that's really what insurance is about, is the risk pool. As far as bringing down costs more generally, we need deregulation of the medical industry. Administration sucks up an enormous amount of cost when it comes to medicine. Dealing with various insurance companies obviously takes up a lot of time and a lot of effort. A lot of that has to do with making sure that you are compliant with various state and federal regulations. You should, of course, as President Trump has said, be able to buy insurance across state lines. It's very silly that you're not allowed to do that. You also want to get involved in incentivizing health savings accounts, right? You should make it tax-free for people to take their money and put it in a health savings account, which would encourage them to save up for a time when they are not healthy. So as I've always said, when it comes to healthcare, there are three elements that you're looking for. You're looking for quality, you're looking for affordability, you're looking for universality. The left likes to focus on universality and affordability at the expense of quality. The right likes to focus on quality and affordability at the expense of universality. And honestly, I, of course, am on the right. I would prefer quality and affordability over universality. because universality can really only be forced by the government getting involved. It does take government compulsion to ensure that every single person has some form of health care provided to them. But I think you can get nearly everybody in a private health care system, and frankly, that's what was true before Obamacare even. Only 7% of Americans were living without health care insurance before Obamacare, and we do have this vast mishmash of public and private health care resources in the United States. The truth is there are large-scale subsidies for most health care in the United States, and there has been for years. So to presume that America is a fully private medical insurance industry is just not true. Okay, John says, there are some politicians in my state working to change our elections to a system of ranked voting. I haven't seen any discussion in the media about the pros and cons of the system compared to the status quo. What are your thoughts on it? Well, ranked voting is this idea that you can vote. It particularly works in primaries. When there are two candidates, ranked voting doesn't matter. It only works when you're talking about multiple candidates. The reason being, let's say that you vote in a primary, like a national primary, and you say, my top choice is Joe Biden, but my second choice is Elizabeth Warren. Well, the way that it works now without ranked choice voting is that let's say you voted for Biden and then Biden were to lose the primary, right? So he's not going to be let's say not a primary. Let's say it's a senatorial race with multiple candidates. It has three candidates or four candidates. What you do is you vote for your top choice. Let's say that person loses. Well, what happens to your vote? Now, normally your vote is gone, right? You spent it. The person lost. It's over. But instead, with ranked choice voting, your second place vote then goes to the other person. So what you end up with is a system where multiple parties are more possible, because obviously if one person is a lot of folks' second choice, then somebody losing may amount to a third party doing a lot better. Now, there are a lot of experts who suggest that ranked choice voting is a good idea. I am not averse to ranked choice voting, frankly. I think it would be interesting to see more candidates with a viable shot at power as opposed to the binary system that we currently have. George says, hey, Ben, I just started college and I want to be politically active. I don't want to embarrass myself, so I've started looking into my beliefs in order to make sure I truly believe them. In doing so, I've stumbled onto the realization I need to read the founding philosophies of the West. I'm in the middle of your book right now. It's great. I want to continue my journey once I'm finished. I was wondering what you would say the essential reading list is for Western thought. Thanks. Well, frankly, every major name that I talk about in the book is sort of required reading. If you want to go all the way back to the beginning, you've got to start with the Bible. It is a foundational text for Western civilization. And you actually have to read some of the commentaries and try to understand what people think when they read the Bible, not sort of the simplistic Sam Harris version of you when you're 12 years old trying to read the Bible, but trying to understand the deeper meaning of the Bible. Then you have to start delving into Greek thought. So Plato and Aristotle would be the easiest places to start. You would also want to look at maybe some Stoic thought or post-Stoic thought, people like Cicero, who was obviously very useful to the founders. You'd probably want to read some ancient philosophy. You want to read some Thomistic philosophy, for example. And then you'd want to read some of the religious writings of Martin Luther, for example. You'd want to read Calvin. You know, this is if you have time. If you don't have time, then what I would suggest is you just go and buy a set of Will Durant books and start reading through those, because he does a pretty good job of recapping history, and it saves you a little bit of time. So read my book. I do mention, I think, most of the major Western thinkers, and I give what I hope is a very user-friendly survey of the evolution of Western thought. Find people that you find interesting and then read more deeply into them. Lawrence says, dear Ben, has Texas always been on the cusp of turning purple or blue, or is this a trend that has arisen in recent years? Thanks, Larry. Well, you know, there have been Democratic governors of Texas before. There was one in the early part of the 1990s. But Texas has generally been red for quite a long time. It's been a long time since Texas was blue, and it was really when the Democratic Party was more moderate. This is something different. Watching Texas turn purple is a different thing than has happened in the past. Hunter says, given that the Founding Fathers never expected there to be political parties, are there inherent problems in our two-party system? How can we address them? What do you think about the original zero-party idea? Is it possible? I don't think that it is possible. There are always going to be needs for organizations that support particular candidates. People do tend to cluster around broader philosophies. That's why parties form. And the truth is that when the Founders talked about the dangers of faction, they weren't specifically talking about the dangers of political party. They were talking about the idea that you are going to get together with a bunch of people who only stand for that group of people, not for broader ideas about what's good for the country. That's what they were afraid of. And we are starting to see that in the return to identity politics tribalism on both left and right. I don't think the parties are the problem. I will say that, again, to get back to that ranked choice voting idea, the idea of changing the voting system so that you can have your second preference actually matter in a lot of elections, this is particularly true for Republicans in states like California. I think that that would be an interesting idea. More diversity in party identity would be a good thing, I think. Alrighty, coming up, We're going to be joined by Heather McDonald. She'll be telling us about Michael Bloomberg's switch in time on Stop and Frisk. This is The Ben Shapiro Show.
Hear us streaming 24/7 at KCNR1460.com.
Hello, I'm Carlene Niver, and I would like to personally thank you for your support while we celebrate over 4 years of business at Carlene's Restaurant and Bar. I'm so proud and excited to see our growth with loyal and new guests alike. Those of you who know me know that I love great food, but more importantly, I love to enjoy myself wherever I go. And that's what my dining team and I strive for when you walk into Carlene's. As the weather transitions, don't forget to book our banquet room for any of your upcoming holiday needs. We also offer outside catering for any occasion. Open 7 days a week, 4 p.m. to 9 p.m., 10 p.m. Friday and Saturday. Happy hour from 4 p.m. to 6 p.m., located in downtown Reading on Center Street. A pinch of patience, a dash of kindness, and a spoonful of laughter make for the best dining experience. I look forward to celebrating over 4 years of business with you at Carlene's Restaurant and Bar.
Hi, this is Brian Martin, General Manager of River Commons Senior Living, and wanted to share some thoughts from Dave Setholter about his experience having his mother-in-law, Marianne, move here to River Commons.
Originally, my mother-in-law wanted to live on her own, and she really wanted to be independent. River Commons has really made that possible for her to not only remain independent, but to actually grow and to thrive. There's just such a big difference in her peace of mind and her well-being, and that's what we really wanted. It's really been the solution for her to come here, and it was her idea. After looking at some other options, when she came here, it was an easy choice for her. She's really happy she did. She feels like she's home. It's enriching. She's meeting new people, really enjoying herself, and that's really what it's all about.
Call today and schedule a tour or luncheon a tour and see for yourself why our residents love living here at River Commons. Call 221-2121 or on the web at river-commons.com.
Tobacco and Brew, located at 2143 Hilltop Drive, has been an integral part of our community for over 40 years. They have supported the veterans, law enforcement, fire and disaster survivors throughout this whole time. Tobacco and Brew has expanded their walk-in humidor and brought to the North State new lines of fine cigars, pipes, and tobacco products. Additionally, they are offering a pipe bar to try out new tobacco for taste and aroma. Tobacco and Brew is your one-stop shop for any tobacco product and accessories to include lighters, humidors, pouches, and more. Tobacco and Brew, 2143 Hilltop Drive.
Alan Gordon, Coach Master Collision. She had minor damage to her rear bumper. I wrote her an estimate. Later, I received a call. The lady responsible for the damage wanted to pay for the repairs out of pocket. Her insurance agent told her a claim would raise her rates for years. With our experience in the claim process, I explained to her most insurance companies would forgive a claim if the cost was below a minimum amount. I suggested she contact her insurance agent and have them review her policy. She called back very excited. It appeared her policy did extend forgiveness. They would pay for the repairs, and she wouldn't be charged with a claim or have to pay a deductible. The accident would not cost her a thing. She was very pleased. Good thing the vehicle owner came to the right place for repairs. We all pay a lot for insurance. Choosing Coachmaster will ensure you get the most for your money. Let this experience work for you. And yes, if we can't fix it, no one can.
Learn more online at CoachmasterAutobody.com.
KCNR is proud to announce that we are now live at 96.5 FM, as well as online, and as always, heard on 1460 AM. Weekday mornings, wake up with the Sue McClain News Hour, followed by Free Fire Radio, your talk radio station at the epicenter of change in downtown Reading. 9 to noon, be informed and laugh along with Armstrong and Getty, the conscience of the nation. Noon to 3, find your financial peace with Dave Ramsey. 3 to 6, the hard-hitting constitutional expert, Mark Levin. Monday through Thursdays at 6 p.m., local shows feature everything from the paranormal to pop culture to unsung heroes of our area. 7 to 9, Ben Shapiro with an expanded program that brings the issues of the day to your radio. And finish your weekday with the Chris Plant Show, 10 p.m. to 1 a.m. KCNR, now on 96.5 FM, 1460 AM, and always online. More than ever, we're your locally owned, community-connected talk radio.
Hi, I'm Sharon Clark of Home Helpers. It's amazing to look back at all the families we've touched since 2004.
but our clients say it best.
I want to express my deep appreciation for the love and support you and your...
So fortunate to have an organization like Home Helpers.
You never know how much your contribution meant or how greatly you touched our lives.
Thank you so much for helping me care for my husband.
After hearing what it's meant to them, I truly can't imagine doing anything else. When you need help for your loved one, choose Home Helpers. There is no place like home.
Getting into college doesn't happen magically. You have to take the right classes now, like Algebra 2, Biology, and a Foreign Language. Learn more at knowhowtogo.org.
Brought to you by the American Council on Education, Lumina Foundation for Education, and the Ad Council.
Welcome back. This is the Ben Shapiro Show. Well, everybody has been laughing at Michael Bloomberg ever since Bloomberg decided that he was going to basically rip on his own stop and frisk policy when he was mayor of New York. Everybody has now come to the modern consensus that stop and frisk was bad policy, that Bloomberg was wrong to engage in it. But now Bloomberg agrees with all of his opponents, apparently. He has come out in his presidential run and attempted to basically backdate opposition to his own policy. Joining us on the line to discuss is Heather McDonald. She's a Thomas W. Smith Fellow at the Manhattan Institute, a contributing editor of City Journal, and a New York Times best-selling author. Her newest book is The Diversity Delusion, How Race and Gender Pandering Corrupt the University and Undermine Our Culture. Heather, thanks so much for joining the Ben Shapiro Show.
Thanks so much for having me on, Ben. I greatly appreciate it.
So why don't we talk a little bit about stop and frisk? So Michael Bloomberg comes out. He basically suggests that stop and frisk was indeed racially driven, which is weird since for years he said that it was not. What is the evidence on stop and frisk? Was it indeed racially driven and was it bad policy?
It was not racially driven, and it was not bad policy, and it remains constitutional policy to this day. It is driven by data. The police were going where people were most being victimized in New York City. That is in minority neighborhoods. The people doing the victimizing are themselves minority. The police were sent to those neighborhoods by community complaints and by crime reports. And once there, they were asked to look for suspicious behavior, things like people hanging out on a street corner at 2 a.m., hitching up their waistband as if they had a gun, go up, ask a few questions. If the person doesn't allay the officer's questions or suspicions, the officer can escalate and possibly pat down the suspect. But this was done with the overwhelming desire to save black lives, and that is, in fact, what it did. At the start of the 1990s, it was assumed that crime was an endemic feature of poor minority neighborhoods. Giuliani first was the one who dispelled that fiction, something that the police used to use to duck accountability. He brought homicides down by two-thirds. People thought, okay, that's it. Crime's going to go back up. Bloomberg comes in and drives them down another 50%. The overwhelming number of people who were saved by those crime numbers were black and Hispanic. It wasn't whites who were being shot in drive-by shootings in New York City or in any other city in this country. It's law-abiding blacks and Hispanics.
So, Heather, one of the statistics that I saw brought forth by folks on the left was the idea that crime rates in New York were dropping before stop and frisk. Stop and frisk was used in the 2000s, but crime had been dropping since the mid-90s, and thus stop and frisk had no real contributing effect on the drop in crime. Is that true, or is it just that there was a comprehensive scheme of more involved policing that involved stop and frisk beginning in 1994 and moving forward through the 2000s?
Well, yeah, crime just went off a cliff in 94. Frank Zimring, who's a very left-wing criminologist at UC Berkeley Law School, wrote a book saying the only thing that explains the drop in crime in New York is policing, including proactive policing, including stop, question, and frisk. Nothing else, any of the left-wing explanations like demographic youth change they have nothing. They have nothing. It is policing and policing only. And the fact is that, again, another left-wing critic generally of criminal justice reform, Robert Weisberg at the Stanford Law School, has said there's nothing more effective in deterring gun violence and gun carrying than stop, question, and frisk.
So, Heather, let's talk about why the country seems to have turned against all of these policies that actually brought about the crime reduction. I've yet to see an argument from the left about why crime actually began to reduce in 1994 that did not involve comprehensive policing, additional funding to police forces, you know, new laws that enable police officers to be more involved. It seems like they just seem like a big coincidence happened in 1994 and suddenly crime rates started to drop. And so if we just reinstitute all of the pre-1994 crime policies, the crime rate will continue to be stagnant. Do you see any evidence this is the case? And have we actually seen, as we roll back some of these policing efforts, a spike in crime in any of these areas?
Well, New York is the one place that has had a very radical drop in stops where crime has not spiked up. It started to spike up. New York is a unique place in that it's got a massive, massive police force on a per capita basis and just in sheer absolute numbers. So as the police backed off of stop, question, and frisk, two things happened. The New York Police Department was able to just use sheer bodies. It positions officers in high crime neighborhoods to stand and use what's known as command presence to simply deter crime. But the other thing that's gone on in New York that has not happened in places like Chicago and Baltimore is the crime drop allowed massive degrees of gentrification. So you have massive demographic change in neighborhoods. You have lower middle income families that are more educated, that have stable families, two parents, that are now acting in the ideal fashion as the informal social controls. Policing is always the second best solution to crime when neighborhoods are unable themselves to maintain social order. But in places like Baltimore and Chicago that also experienced drops in stops during the height of the Black Lives Matter movement in Baltimore after the Freddie Gray riots, you can see graphs where the drug enforcement fell off a cliff, and the exact mirror image going up was gun crime because cops just stopped making stops. The Obama Justice Department accused them of racism for questioning people hanging out on corners. Chicago, too, had an 80% drop in stops after the Justice Department started meddling there and the ACLU, and they continue to have just out-of-control drive-by shootings. So New York is unique it's the one place where a radical drop in stop, question, and frisk has not yet been accompanied by a radical increase in gun violence, but it's starting to creep up in neighborhoods across Brooklyn and parts of the Bronx.
We're speaking with Heather McDonald. She's the Thomas W. Smith Fellow at the Manhattan Institute. Her new book is called The Diversity Delusion, How Race and Gender Pandering Corrupted the University and Undermine Our Culture. Heather, I want to ask you in a second about the soft on crime policies that are now being really driven home in major cities like Los Angeles and San Francisco, what the results of those have been, issues like crime and homelessness, in just one second. First, I need to take a moment to remind you, you can get a great deal on a subscription over at Daily Wire right now, like this minute. You head on over to dailywire.com, and you can get a subscription right now for 25% off from now until January 1st. That means your loved one will get all the fantastic perks, plus the Majestic Leftist Tears Tumblr makes a great Christmas or Hanukkah gift, year-end gift for yourself. You can listen to all 3 hours of this radio show on demand when you become a Daily Wire insider. Not only do you get my show, you'll also be able to hear from prominent conservatives like Andrew Klavan and Matt Walsh. You even get the execrable Michael Knowles. Listen to live and recorded episodes of the Michael Knowles Show, the Matt Walsh Show, the Andrew Klavan Show, and other Daily Wire productions like Daily Wire Backstage. And you get to talk with us. You can ask all of us questions through the mailbag. We answer them on our shows. Plus, as an all-access member, you can take part in our awesome Ask Me Anything-style discussion feature. You can log in. You can talk directly to me or our other hosts or our writers, even special guests, during live online chats. That is dailywire.com/gift and get 25% off, a fantastic deal for all of the Shapiro lovers in your life. dailywire.com/gift. Go check it out right now. Do not wait. Okay, Heather, so let's talk about broader Democratic crime policies. So President Trump has made being tough on crime one of his sort of signature messages. At the same time, he has pushed criminal justice reform. So it's been a sort of bifurcated approach from the Trump administration. On the one hand, he says he wants federal involvement in cleaning up homelessness in places like Los Angeles. On the other hand, he has pushed criminal justice reform, presumably as an attempt to make inroads with minority communities who perceive additional policing as racist. What have been the results of criminal justice reform? What do you expect the results to be of the Trump criminal justice reform agenda?
Well, the Trump criminal justice reform agenda, I can live with if he just shut his mouth up. I'm happy to tweak the federal drug penalties a year here, a year there, because they're arbitrary to begin with. The problem with Trump is that he's an opportunist, and he's adopting the rhetoric of the left and claiming that tough on crime sentencing is racist. The reason that we have a disproportionate number of blacks in prison is due to criminal justice racism. That is an outright lie. It is one thing and one thing only drives the prison population, Ben, and that is rates of criminal offending. And so Trump is going to do a lot more damage with his rhetoric in giving credence to this phony and dangerous narrative that increases racial divisions in this country than any sort of First Step Act can be. That having been said, again, anything he's doing at a federal level, because the federal level is a minute portion of criminal justice in this country and a minute portion of our prison population, is overwhelmed by this secular change of going back to decriminalize and deincarcerate. And it's a classic pendulum swing, Ben, when you have conservatives that step up to the plate and say, we have to be honest about crime. We have to use law enforcement. There's nothing racist about doing so. We have to take public disorder seriously. They clean up the cities, and then the left comes in as parasites on that success. The public forgets what disorder and crime really look like, and the left puts out its self-righteous, virtue signaling policies if we're going to roll this all back again. And we're going to head for some very bad times, because the fact of the matter is when you wink at public disorder, when you say it's fine to jump turnstiles, when you say it's fine to urinate in public, to steal, to engage in petty theft, you are asking for trouble. You are asking for society to start unraveling, for criminals at higher levels to get the message that nobody is in control and that they have the right to take control of the streets.
Yeah, Heather, I cannot for the life of me understand why in California, which obviously is a very blue state, Republicans aren't running on law and order and safety. The fact is that our major cities, I mean, I'm a lifelong resident of Los Angeles, our major cities have devolved into basically giant homeless encampments with street crime becoming more and more rife, with open needles on every corner and people defecating in public. How is it that the Republican parties in these areas have not picked up on the anti-crime message that actually won Republicans office in places like New York and, yes, in Los Angeles when Richard Reardon was the mayor?
Well, one can only speculate, Ben, that they are as cowed by the race rhetoric as occasionally Donald Trump is, because you're absolutely right. This should be a winning issue. On the other hand, we've just seen that San Francisco is not yet ready to face the truth, having elected the most radical DA possible. As you know, you've pointed out, the child of police cop killers. So they still want to toy with their virtue signaling. We're more progressive than now. But generally, this should be an absolute issue for the Republican Party. But now, even they are swayed by the phony idea that to talk about criminal victimization, to say Black Lives Matter, and that there's nobody for whom Black Lives Matters more than police officers in this country, that is somehow racist. If the Republicans can't even stand up for the efficacy of law enforcement, then they're worth very little.
Well, Heather McDonald, author of The Diversity Delusion, How Race and Gender Pandering Corrupt the University, Undermine Our Culture, and fellow at the Manhattan Institute. Really appreciate your time, Heather. Thanks so much.
Thanks so much, Ben.
Well, coming up, we're going to be talking about the radicalism of the Democrats, which continues to move forward despite the warnings of Barack Obama and Rahm Emanuel. First, you need the perfect gift for this holiday season. What is it? More of me. More of us here over at the Daily Wire. We're talking about a Daily Wire membership, 25% off from now until January 1st. All Insider Plus gift memberships are 25% off. That means your loved one will get all the fantastic perks, plus the majestic Leftist Tears tumbler. So head on over to DailyWire.com, become an insider, join tens of thousands of fans in supporting the largest conservative podcast in America. Again, that is 25% off all of those Insider Plus gift memberships this holiday season. Give them a gift they will thank you for all year long. Go to DailyWire.com/gift to get 25% off. Again, DailyWire.com/gift. Already coming up. Barack Obama is warning Democrats they're going too far to the left. So is Rahm Emanuel. Democrats' response? Who are you guys? Why should we listen to you? Only the most successful Democratic politician of the last half century. This is the Ben Shapiro Show.
Are you looking for senior care for your mom or dad but don't know where to start? Hi, I'm Jen London with A Place for Mom. Nobody knows your parent or loved one better than you, and nobody knows senior living better than the experts at A Place for Mom. It's a free service, and we've helped thousands of families find the right place for their mom or dad. There's a place for answers, A Place for Mom. Call today.
Call A Place for Mom at 1-800-391-1755. That's 1-800-391-1755.
If you have hard water, the Limescale not only leaves white spots, it clogs pipes and breaks down appliances, costing you hundreds of dollars in energy and wear. Eliminate Limescale and other water issues like brown staining, bad odors, and lead with HydroCare water products available from Wave Home Solutions. Wave's affordable systems don't use salts or chemicals. You'll love the way your water tastes, smells, and looks. Satisfaction guaranteed. For more information, go to WaveBestWater.com. That's WaveBestWater.com.
This is Groundy with me, Julie Pace,
AP's Washington Bureau Chief.
The thing that always struck me about Harris is that she had so much potential. That's what you kept hearing from people, all of the potential.
Yeah, it's interesting. I like Senator Harris, but I'm not sure she can win.
Original, unbiased, the news you need as America prepares for the 2020 election. Listen and subscribe to Ground Game, free from the Westwood One Podcast Network, where the conversation starts.
Attention all authors. Page Publishing is looking for authors. Have you written a book and want to get it published? Page Publishing will get your book into bookstores and for sale online at Amazon, Apple iTunes, and other outlets. They handle all aspects of the publishing process for you. Printing, cover art, publicity, copyright, and editing. Call 800-501-3689 now for your free author submission kit. That's 800-501-3689 for your free author submission kit. Again, 800-501-3689.
Are you drowning in IRS tax debt?
I owe the IRS $37,000.
Get ready for a toll-free hotline. Take advantage of new IRS tax forgiveness programs that may protect you from IRS collection agencies. They have the power to garnish your wages, put liens on your property, and levy your bank account. Civic Tax Relief can help protect you from the IRS.
Civic Tax Relief basically represented me against the IRS, and by the time everything was completed, I didn't owe the IRS anything.
Find out about the Fresh Start program that is now available through Civic Tax Relief. Civic Tax Relief's special tax hotline can help you discover all the relief programs available for free.
I would recommend anyone who has a tax problem to contact Civic Tax Relief.
Just call 800-841-0908. 800-841-0908. Don't wait. Call now. 800-841-0908. 800-841-0908.
Welcome back. This is the Ben Shapiro Show. Well, the Democrats have a problem. The problem is that, obviously, they are running just wildly away from the center, and it's a disaster for them. It really is. But Barack Obama is acknowledging this. He was doing an interview, and he suggested that the Democrats are pushing too far left, and they're going to lose the election. He said, even as we push the envelope, and we are bold in our vision, we also have to be rooted in reality. The average American doesn't think we have to completely tear down the system and remake it. That was obviously him subtweeting Elizabeth Warren and Senator Bernie Sanders. He said, I don't think we should be deluded into thinking that the resistance to certain approaches to things is simply because voters haven't heard a bold enough proposal, and that if they hear something as bold as possible, then immediately that's going to activate them. That, of course, is 100% true. But people on the left lost their bleep over this. Ilhan Omar tweeted out, if being too far left means believing healthcare is a human right, future generations should live on a healthy planet, all student debt should be canceled, the minimum wage should be $15, lives depend on gun reform, families don't belong in cages, count me in, strong arm emoji. Yes, sure, that's exactly, I'm sure, what everybody means. John Cryer, the sitcom star, said, I am too far left because I believe we cannot let greed cause the collapse of the ecosystem that supports all human life on Earth. Okay, then, I really look forward to him giving up his multi-million dollar residual check. A lot of folks are very angry at Barack Obama for having said all of this, but Obama's team is basically warning the Democrats, guys, you're killing yourselves here. You are just killing yourselves here. So, Rahm Emanuel has a piece warning the Democrats. In the Washington Post, he says, since the New Deal, Democrats have thrived when championing ideas more in the belief that rights come with responsibilities and that benefits are earned through work. If we fail to return to that agenda ahead of 2020, we risk squandering a rare opportunity. Fortunately, we have a chance to shift the narrative. He says he's happy that Deval Patrick and Michael Bloomberg jumped in. But he says just because the Democrats, the Warrens and Sanderses have big ideas, that does not mean that these ideas are good. He says, I think Medicare for All is a pipe dream, though I support efforts to expand coverage and control costs. And much as I agree that concentrated power is a threat to American prosperity, I believe universal basic income runs counter to America's deep-seated belief that people should earn their living by working hard and playing by the rules. Since we have consensus on the nature of the problem, the question is how to level the playing field. And if you look to FDR or Kennedy or Bill Clinton or even Obama, he says they all appealed to voters by tapping into the nation's firmly established belief that people should earn their prosperity through hard work. Right? He even tries to couch benefits programs as non-handouts but earned benefits. He says by tying benefits to work, the programs that remain the central pillars of the Democratic Party's legacy stand apart from the agenda the far left has embraced in this campaign. He says our most sweeping successes fighting poverty have emerged when we've offered the American people a core bargain. You work through the course of your life, the government will help you climb into the middle class. He says when our party has nominated candidates banging the drum for redistribution like George McGovern or Walter Mondale, we've lost. Rahm Emanuel says hopefully bids from Bloomberg and Patrick will serve as a wake-up call. Unlikely. Unlikely. He says, let's not be politically short-sighted or give Republicans opportunities to frame us as irresponsible tax and spenders by championing, for example, proposals to give free health care to new undocumented immigrants. Beyond harnessing Trump's abysmal approval rating, we can use this moment to establish a governing majority that lasts well past 2020. Let's not squander our advantage. But they are squandering their advantage because they can't handle it. They can't handle it. This is why you have Bernie Sanders out there suggesting that it is a quote-unquote international embarrassment, the United States healthcare system. You know, the healthcare system that foreigners come to when they need a surgery? The healthcare system that produces over 50% of all medical innovation on planet Earth? He says that our healthcare system is an international embarrassment, which should come as a shock to, you know, the world's best doctors who work here and the world's best surgeries, which were invented here, and the foreigners who come here, again, to get surgery when they cannot in their home countries. Here's Bernie Sanders being an idiot.
When we talk about transforming America, we're going to end the international embarrassment of the United States being the only major country on earth not to guarantee health care to all people as a human right. No more premiums, no co-payments, no deductibles, no out-of-pocket expenses. You'll go to the doctor you want and the hospital you want. Health care is a human right. And we are going to pass Medicare for all.
Okay, that's called a garbage fantasy. Right? I mean, what he's saying there is just a garbage fantasy. It's never going to occur. When he says you're going to be able to go to the hospital you want, to the doctor you want, get the surgery that you want, all for free. No one's going to pay. I mean, he sounds like a guy selling a used mattress. Not going to happen. Nobody believes this is going to happen. There are 20-week waiting lines for orthopedic surgery in places like Canada. What the hell is he talking about? And the cost of his proposals is enormous. It is going to require the massive increase in middle-class taxes. So, are the Democrats prepared to go down this path? Apparently, the answer is yes. And not only are they prepared to go down this path, they're going to castigate anybody who has doubts. So, Pete Buttigieg is getting ripped up and down by the Democrats. Well, back in 2011, it turns out he did a speech. Wait for it. He went a speech in front of a Tea Party group. Oh, no. According to the left and the media, the Tea Partiers are terrorists, of course. You know, wanting small government and not nationalized health care, this makes you a terrorist. So Buttigieg is getting slammed. There's a clip of Buttigieg going around talking about how the Tea Party may actually have some good points. And this is being used as an excuse to basically suggest that Buttigieg cannot be the nominee. Here's the old clip of Buttigieg.
There's some, especially in my party, the Tea Party is a wholly owned subsidiary of the Republican Party. But there are many others who believe that the Tea Party is motivated by real concerns about the direction of our government and the responsiveness of our government to citizens, and above all, the frustration with business as usual. That is what motivated me to run. And so while we may come from often very different perspectives, I believe we might find that we have a lot in common on that front.
Uh-oh, Buttigieg said that we might have something in common in fighting corruption. Democrats are very, very angry at all this. But Joe Biden makes the final point here. He says, look, Trump isn't going to be easy to beat. You nominate somebody crazy, it ain't going to happen.
It's not going to be easy to beat him. We're talking about this is going to be just a cakewalk. He's going to have $1 billion.
From the Pacific Justice Institute, this is The Legal Edge with Brad Dacus.
In a recent speech, Attorney General William Barr emphasized the religious foundation of our nation. He said religious liberty is the scaffolding of a free government. Well, Mr. Barr is concerned that militant secularists not only promote their own views, but seek to silence the religious voice.
Stay informed on religious freedoms. Receive our weekly email newsletter, The Legal Insider, at pji.org.
The Redding Rancheria Senior Nutrition Program provides socialization, transportation, and free meals to eligible Native American elders and their spouses. Our program celebrates Native elders through cultural activities, entertainment, exercise, and education. Elders can dine together here and will deliver meals to those who are unable to attend. The Redding Rancheria Senior Nutrition Program is free. Discover the services available to you or your elders at reddingrancheria.com.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Redding by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.
News this hour from townhall.com. I'm Gordon Griffin. Authorities say the remains of six people have been found after a helicopter on a tour of one of the most rugged and remote coastlines in Hawaii crashed at the top of a mountain on the island of Kauai. Officials said Friday there's no indication that anyone survived that crash. A search began for the helicopter carrying a pilot and six passengers from two families after it was reported overdue from a tour Thursday evening. A plane crash in Kazakhstan has killed at least a dozen people and injured more than 50.
Officials say the plane had 98 people on board when it crashed in Almaty. Kazakhstan's deputy prime minister says investigators are looking into two possibilities for the cause, pilot error or technical failure. He says the plane's tail hit the runway twice, indicating it struggled to take off. A survivor says the plane started shaking less than 2 minutes after takeoff.
That's correspondent Mike Hempen. The Russian military says its new intercontinental weapon that can fly 27 times the speed of sound is now operational. It bolsters the country's nuclear strike capability and can carry a nuclear weapon of up to 2 megatons.
President Putin has made it clear that Russia intends to modernize its nuclear arsenal. He has a number of, some of them quite science fiction sounding programs going forward. Partly this is a response to America's huge interest in defensive systems. So Russia is deliberately trying to find ways of evading potential defenses. And of course, coming at a time with growing superpower competition again, talk of a renewed Cold War tensions between Moscow and Washington.
That is BBC correspondent Jonathan Marcus. Interstate 5 is reopened in Southern California's Theon Pass after a 36-hour closure caused by a massive snowstorm. More on these stories at townhall.com.
Haul packages for a living? A gas-powered Mercedes-Benz Sprinter delivers. Transport people? A Sprinter van with 0% financing is a five-star idea. If food delivery is your thing, then a gas Sprinter caters to you. And if you're a general contractor, the Sprinter with 0% financing nails it. With innovation, safety, and technology, Sprinter is built for you. And it's built for your bottom line with 0% financing. The Mercedes-Benz Sprinter, starting at just $33,790. And for a limited time with IRS Section 179, you could be eligible for up to a $25,000 tax deduction. Gas engine, 0% financing, and a possible tax deduction? Now that's a Sprinter that delivers. Mercedes-Benz. Vans. Born to run.
MSRP excludes all options, taxes, title, registration, transportation, charge, and dealer prep fee. Options, model availability, national dealer price may vary. See dealer for details about costs and terms. Only valid on 2018 or 2019 Mercedes-Benz Sprinter vans excluding cab chassis. Qualified commercial customers only. Financing offer valid through January 2nd, 2020. Consult your tax advisor for more information. Limits may apply. Visit mbvans.com.
There is growing speculation that Democratic Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez may be angling for a White House run.
The freshman Democrat has been appearing alongside Senator Bernie Sanders at campaign events, fueling speculation the appearance is double for cementing her own claim on Sanders' millennial base. Combined, they've drawn larger crowds than their Democrat rivals. Her efforts also coincide with a resurgence in Sanders' poll numbers that saw a setback after his recent heart attack. Whatever comes of Sanders' 2020 bid, there's growing speculation that the Green New Deal author is the heir apparent of Sanders' support and likely to make her own run for the White House one day. Bob Agner reporting.
The wreckage of a helicopter carrying seven people to one of the most rugged coastlines in Hawaii has been found in a mountainous area on the island of Kauai. Officials say they're sending additional resources.
Searchers looking for survivors. News and analysis at townhall.com. Legendary radio personality Don Imus has died in Texas at the age of 79.
Don Imus was known for a deep, sullen, gravelly voice and biting commentary whose trespasses into the insulting or vulgar often cost him positions despite his Broadcasting Hall of Fame career. Imus charted a high-profile resume in both California and New York City radio, a disc jockey, comic, and author who overcame substance abuse and the loss of a lung to eventually developing a politically influential talk show on radio, then TV, from the late 1980s till 2015. Imus's often disdainful public persona was tempered by off-air philanthropy. George Bonzani reporting.
Volkswagen stepping up its electric car production. The German automaker says it will reach its goal of 1 million e-cars a year by the end of 2023. That is 2 years earlier than planned. More on these stories at townhall.com. I'm Gordon Griffin.
Hi, this is Linda Bott, and let me tell you about our North State Now show on Thursday nights at 6 p.m. right here on KCNR. The first Thursday of the month will be yours truly, covering arts and entertainment and all kinds of fun stuff. The second Thursday will be Michelle Slade, highlighting and interviewing North State heroes. The third Thursday is James Masada and Rhonda Alvey, bringing you all things with Enjoy the Magazine and Enjoy the Store. And the fourth Thursday from Shasta Regional Medical Center is Dr. Orna Gill covering all things women's health. The title sponsor for North State Now is the Reading Civic Auditorium, also brought to you by the Black Bear Diner, Shasta Regional Medical Center, and Carlene's Restaurant and Bar, located at 1100 Center Street. That's North State Now, right here on KCNR, 96.5 FM and 1460 AM. 6 p.m. North State Now.
Happy holidays. Welcome to the Ben Shapiro Show. This hour, we'll be sharing a broadcast from earlier this year. Take a listen. Well, one of the unfortunate facts of today's modern American life and our politics is that the militant left is attempting to recapitulate the history of the United States. They're trying to suggest the history of the United States is unremittingly dark and terrible. The Constitution of the United States is, in fact, a racist document. Now, what's weird about this is that that was the original justification for slavery laid out by Justice Roger Taney in Dred Scott. I mean, that case suggested the Constitution was steeped in slavery and racism. It was the case made by the secessionists back before the Civil War, was that the Constitution was inherently a racist pro-slavery document. And that argument was rebutted by Abraham Lincoln and Frederick Douglass, among others, who said, no, the Constitution is informed by the Declaration of Independence, despite the fact that the United States allowed slavery up through the Civil War. The fact is that the Constitution was never meant to create all this room to run for slavery. It was a compromise document that acknowledged that slavery existed, but it was never meant to be a pro-slavery document, nor was it meant to greenlight segregation, nor was it meant to greenlight racism. Now, today, that argument has been picked up. The argument of the secessionists and Roger Taney has actually been picked up by the militant left, which wants to see the Constitution as a race-based document in order to allow for race-based preferences to move forward. I'll give you an example. So, there's an article today from The Atlantic. It's by a guy named Theodore Johnson. He's a senior fellow at the Brennan Center for Justice. He's on the left. It's called How Conservatives Turned the Colorblind Constitution Against Racial Progress. Progressives used to argue that the Constitution doesn't see race. Now, conservatives have, quote-unquote, weaponized that same idea. Weaponized the idea? Well, either the idea is true or it's not. Either the Constitution is a race-based document or it is not a race-based document. Now, originally, as I say, it was secessionists and slave owners who held that the Constitution was a race-based document. Jefferson Davis, the leader of the Confederacy, the president of the Confederacy, he suggested that the Constitution of the United States was signed with the understanding that it was supposed to forever and always apply only to white people, that it was not supposed to bar slavery in any way. That was the view of John C. Calhoun also, the firebrand senator, secretary of state, secretary of war, two-time vice president. He routinely disparaged the Declaration of Independence. He said the Declaration of Independence has no relevance to the Constitution. He said the Declaration of Independence is untrue. Why? Well, because the Declaration of Independence lays forth universal aspirations for the American people. and for people everywhere about the equality of all human beings before the law. Right? John C. Calhoun famously suggested in 1848 that the key proposition that all men are created equal was patently false and superfluous. He said this proposition was inserted in our Declaration of Independence without any necessity. It made no part of our justification in separating from the parent country. He said, in fact, that this provision was evil. He said, for a long time it lay dormant, but in the process of time it began to germinate. He called it a dangerous error. He said it would produce its poisonous fruits. What exactly were the poisonous fruits? America's disinclination toward slavery. Basically, Jefferson Davis and the rest of the secessionists made the claim that the Constitution was a racist document. That was a claim that was backed by, again, Roger Taney in the Dred Scott decision. Now, Abraham Lincoln had a very different view of all of this. Right? Abraham Lincoln suggested instead that the legacy of the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution was an anti-slavery legacy. And he pointed out repeatedly that the founding fathers, while most of them were slaveholders, most of them also did not like the institution of slavery. Right? John Adams stated, my opinion against it has always been known. Never in my life did I own a slave. He stated, quote, every measure of prudence, therefore, ought to be assumed for the eventual total extirpation of slavery from the United States. Benjamin Franklin was the head of the Pennsylvania Abolition Society. He said that mankind are all formed by the same almighty being, alike objects of his care, and equally designed for the enjoyment of happiness. The Christian religion teaches us to believe, and the political creed of Americans fully coincides with the position. We earnestly entreat your serious attention to the subject of slavery, that you will be pleased to countenance the restoration of liberty to those unhappy men who alone in this land of freedom are degraded into perpetual bondage and who are groaning in servile subjection. John Jay and Alexander Hamilton, who are two of the three writers of the Federalist Papers, were among the men who created the New York Manumission Society in 1787. James Madison himself was a believer that slavery eventually had to be gotten rid of. He wrote that it would be wrong to place in the Constitution any admission of, quote, the idea that there could be property in men. And so that logic was carried forward by Abraham Lincoln and by Frederick Douglass. So Frederick Douglass, the famous former ex-slave and abolitionist, in the run-up to the Civil War, he made the case that reading the Constitution of the United States as a race-based document was completely wrong. Instead, he called the Constitution a, quote, glorious liberty document. He said, read its preamble, consider its purposes. Is slavery among them? Is it at the gateway? Is it in the temple? It is neither. Abraham Lincoln noted in his 1860 famous Cooper Union speech that 22 of the 39 framers of the Constitution voted on the Northwest Ordinance, which banned slavery in new territories. 20 of those people voted in favor of the legislation, and another framer, George Washington, signed it. Abraham Lincoln made the point that to read the Constitution outside the light of the Declaration of Independence would be a mistake. And he pointed out that the future of the United States lay in getting rid of slavery and moving toward the institution dying. We'll get to Abraham Lincoln's view in just a second, and the reason why this is relevant. But first, great news, gang. We have the perfect gift for you to give this holiday season. It's the gift of a Daily Wire membership. From now until January 1st, all Insider Plus gift memberships will be 25% off. That is one hell of a deal. That means your loved one will get all the amazing perks, plus the majestic Leftist Tears tumbler, and you receive all the savings. Again, that is 25% off all Insider Plus gift memberships this holiday season. Give them a gift they will thank you for all year long. Head on over to dailywire.com/gift and get 25% off. Again, that's dailywire.com/gift, and you get 25% off. Don't wait. Here's what you get as a member. You can listen to all 3 hours of this radio show on demand when you become a Daily Wire Insider. Plus, as an all-access member, you can take part in our amazing Ask Me Anything-style discussion feature. You can log in and talk to me, our other hosts, our writers, even special guests during live online chats. And if you join Insider Plus or the all-access tier, you get the exclusive Leftist Tears tumbler. So you can drink those Leftist Tears, coffee, tea, whatever it is you're into, hot or cold. The tumbler is not available for sale anywhere. You can only get it if you're a Daily Wire Insider. Also, be sure to check out the Daily Wire store. You can stock up on official Daily Wire hoodies, T-shirts, sweaters, and more. It's a perfect place for your holiday shopping needs. Don't get everybody the old sweater they don't like. Get them something awesome from the Daily Wire store. Ever wonder what the man behind this incredibly beautiful voice looks like? You want to listen to the show at your desk while you pretend to do work? This is the only way to get all 3 hours of The Ben Shapiro Show on demand. There's no other way. So head on over to dailywire.com, become an insider, join tens of thousands of fans in supporting the largest conservative podcast in America. Again, that is 25% off all Insider Plus gift memberships this holiday season. Give them a gift that they will thank you for all year long. Head on over to dailywire.com/gift to get your 25% off. Again, that is dailywire.com/gift to get 25% off. Don't wait. Head on over to dailywire.com/gift. So in 1858, Abraham Lincoln said, "I believe this government cannot endure permanently half slave and half free. Either the opponents of slavery will arrest the further spread of it and place it where the public mind shall rest in the belief that it is in the course of ultimate extinction, or its advocates will push it forward till it shall become alike as lawful in all the states, old as well as new, north as well as south." Okay, and the vision that the Constitution of the United States was actually a non-racially based document was a vision that was carried forward by Martin Luther King Jr. Right? MLK famously suggested that the Declaration of Independence and founding ideals had to be called forth, not subsumed, right? He said, "When the architects of our republic wrote the magnificent words of the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence, they were signing a promissory note to which every American was to fall heir. This note was a promise that all men, yes, black men as well as white men, would be guaranteed the unalienable rights of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. I have a dream that one day this nation will rise up and live out the true meaning of its creed. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal." So in other words, the long history of abolitionism in the United States actually started at the founding and grew over time. And that was what was part of the Constitution. And it was that legacy that was called upon by not only the abolitionists, but also by civil rights fighters in the 1950s and 60s and 40s. It's the reason why John Marshall Harlan dissented in Plessy versus Ferguson in 1896. He said, "There's no case here. Our Constitution is colorblind." Okay, but now members of the political left are suggesting that that's bad. They're suggesting that this was all a lie, it was a convenient lie, that the reality is that our Constitution was not, in fact, colorblind. Not only was it colorblind, it enshrined color, and therefore, the response of government should be allowed to include color now. So, in other words, in order to abolish segregation, we had to pretend that the Constitution was colorblind, but it really was not. And since it's not, we can now have programs like Affirmative Action. Right? That is the case that is being made by Theodore Johnson over at The Atlantic. Recasting American history as a history of slavery and brutality and evil, not as a history of freedom winning out over the dark side of human nature. Okay, we'll get to more of this in just 1 second. First, you need the perfect gift for this holiday season. What is it? More of me. More of us here over at the Daily Wire. We're talking about a Daily Wire membership, 25% off from now until January 1st. All Insider Plus gift memberships are 25% off. That means your loved one will get all the fantastic perks, plus the majestic Leftist Tears tumbler. Also, be sure to check out the Daily Wire store. You can stock up on official Daily Wire hoodies, T-shirts, sweaters, and more. It's a perfect place for your holiday shopping needs. You ever wonder what the man behind this deep, mellifluous voice looks like? You want to listen to the show at your desk while you pretend to do work? This is the only way to get all 3 hours of The Ben Shapiro Show on demand. No other way. So head on over to dailywire.com, become an insider, join tens of thousands of fans in supporting the largest conservative podcast in America. Again, that is 25% off all of those Insider Plus gift memberships this holiday season. Give them a gift they will thank you for all year long. Go to dailywire.com/gift to get 25%.